Good morrow, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Sorry, I was just adjusting my microphone there. You know, it's funny. We had a situation where the microphone was going up. It was going down. I thought almost somebody was playing a joke on me because it would always go away from my mouth. And then all week, it's been great. They did something to it on Friday. Our terrific chief engineer, Dan Herschel, he fixed it or something, did something. And then they sent out an email basically saying, don't touch the microphone. You don't twist it or anything else. Just move it forward, right, up and down, or left and right. That's it. And since then, it's been perfect. But today was the first day that it was still trying to do its thing where it slips away from me. But now it seems pretty good. So I'm going to try and not touch it, keep my distance, and talk to you about some things that are of concern. Hey, do you want to hear about January 6th? If you answered no, then you are listening to the right radio program. And I don't mean to be flippant, and I don't mean to act as if the issue of people rioting in the Capitol is not a significant one. It certainly is. It's just, I'm not really sure what I have to add to it. If you were just listening to me with Dominic Carter, and Dominic does a great show every midnight to one, you've got to listen. And he's kind enough to invite me in the last few minutes. I basically gave you my two cents on the January 6th riot. And I really don't have anything more to say. I think a lot of people on our station have said a great deal about it. And I think we'll see what happens. But ultimately, I can't help but view this as a partisan exercise. And look, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, I'm proven wrong. But I know a lot of people taking it very seriously. But I want to give you fair warning. This will be a January 6th riot-free zone for the next 4 hours. Now, in the 5 o'clock hour, we will give you some highlights, some audio, some analysis even. But there's something that America does and that Brazil does that has proven to be pretty dangerous. And my question is why? I, as you might imagine, having a wife who is expecting, have started to pay a lot more attention to stories involving pregnancy and children and parenting. You know, the old saying goes, where you stand depends on where you sit. And that's certainly true. And so I've become more attuned. I mean, I'm reading the same publications that I always have, but I've become more attuned to news about pregnancy and parenting and childbirth and so on and so forth. And I came across a couple of articles about the surge in C-section deliveries in the country of Brazil. Now, I was a C-section, and so was, of course, Julius Caesar. So there's a lot to be said for those of us that are cesareans. But the country of Brazil has one of the highest rates of cesarean births in the world. They actually account for 55.5% of all deliveries of babies in Brazil. In private hospitals in Brazil, it's 84%. Now, that is wild. So the question I started to ask was why, and it's gotten so much so that they're even scheduling C-section parties, fancy parties, where parents invite their friends and their family to the hospital and they have a big party. So I started to do a little research into why. But before I started to come up with different theories, review different writings, and if you have a theory as to why, give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. I said, well, let me look at what it is in the United States of America. Lo and behold, I am far from a rarity, because in the United States of America, the rate of C-section delivery is over 30%. It looks to be about 32%, depending on the year. So this is, the United States is also one of the world leaders in C-section delivery. So you have a situation where we're told by the World Health Organization, for whatever that's worth, that the ideal rate for C-section births should be between 10% and 15%. Now, Brazil and the United States are a long way away from that. So the question I have for you is why? What is it about the United States, doctors here, women's here, women here, hospitals here, that lead to such a dramatic rise in C-section deliveries as opposed to the rest of the world? I'm going to tell you the best theory that I've come across, but I'd love to hear your theory as well. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And obviously, whenever you're discussing subjects like childbirth or things like that, things can get a little personal. So let's try to use our language carefully. Whenever you're talking about certain parts, you know, you don't want to be dismissive. You don't want to be using any words that people may find offensive. So let's keep it all above board if we can. And I have no doubt that you, as a responsible radio listener, will be able to do just that. Now, the thing about what's happening in the United States is the numbers keep going up. So the numbers of C-sections rises just about every year. So you might think, what's the big deal? Frank Moreno was a C-section. Other people have been C-sections. I think Marlena Shivo was here last. She said her two children were C-sections. High C-section rates and C-section deliveries lead to a whole bunch of potential problems. First of all, as with any surgery, there are certain risks that are associated with a C-section delivery. You have the risk of infection. You have the risk of postpartum hemorrhage. You have a reaction to amnesia. You have a blood clot or a surgical injury. The Mayo Clinic says that mothers face a higher risk of potentially serious complications in a subsequent pregnancy after a C-section. It could be the reason I'm my mother's only child. Could also be because my parents got divorced after I was born. I hope there's no correlation. So you have the statistics don't look great for C-sections. Women over the age of 35 who had C-sections were almost three times more likely to have severe complications. So you have a situation where none of the experts think that this is healthy. So why is this happening? 800-848-WABC. So the best answer that I could find, and I'm sure like with any trend, there's a multitude of answers. That's why I'm eager to see what answers you come up with at 1-800-848-9222. The best answer that I could find was in an article written about 2 years ago for The Atlantic. And I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. And it's written by a doctor and an economist. And which is a pretty interesting combination. Two different people. Emily Oster is the economist. Spencer McClelland is the doctor. And ultimately, they write that doctors are generally paid quite a bit more for a C-section than for a traditional birth. So there's actually an economic incentive for the doctors to perform these C-sections instead of standard delivery. Now, I don't know about you, but that strikes me as a little upside down. Now, this is the first year because these numbers, and this was the article that I came across, because these numbers have gotten so out of control. Now, there's this group, some medical group that keeps track of these things, that the Joint Commission, the nation's oldest and largest standard setting and accrediting body in healthcare, they now plan to start publicly reporting this year on hospitals with high C-section birth rates. So we'll see, now that these C-section rates are going to be public for each hospital, if this changes anything. But so far, that's the best explanation that I've been able to come across. Why do you think that's the case? And could we, if we continue at this rate, could we be Brazil with 84% of deliveries done in private hospitals ending up being a C-section? What do you think? 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Shy is in New Jersey. Hello, Shy.
Yeah, hi there. So to answer your question, and for the record, I'm a physician. I'm not an OBGYN, but I'm a physician, a primary care physician. And my wife practices GYN. She doesn't deliver, but she is in the field. And there's no question about it. I think you're probably on something with a financial aspect to it. It would be bad medicine, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some truth to that, some validity to that. But in reality, there's certain aspects. First of all, another thing is scheduling. And then just for the record, I think that it's definitely important. C-sections are surgery, and it's a major surgery that has a tremendous, possible complications. And I would avoid it if possible, but I know people who find the convenience aspect of scheduling when the baby is going to come. If you do have one C-section, there's risks of having a natural vaginal delivery afterwards. So once you have one C-section, you're much more likely to have another C-section, although it doesn't have to be. In certain communities, myself, I'm Jewish, there's probably a lower rate of C-section because of multiple birth, right? So people want to have more babies, therefore they're going to try to avoid C-section, and therefore I find that Jewish religious doctors are more likely to do a VBAC, which is a vaginal birth after C-section. So all those are factors that are going to. Now, as far as Brazil, I would not be surprised if there's an aesthetic issue of, women don't want to have their private areas kind of expanded. And
well, it's interesting that you say that, Shai, because and I appreciate all the information, and I have a question myself. But Brazil is also one of the leading nations when it comes to cosmetic plastic surgery. So you do have a situation where people's looks, and including women's looks in Brazil, is something that, one, is very important to them, but I guess it's important to people everywhere. But it's certainly something that they have had no problem enlisting the medical community in that country in.
Right. No, definitely. And another thing in the U.S., for instance, a big issue, and especially in fields like, neurosurgery and OBGYN, is a malpractice.
See, and that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting to see if somebody was going to say that. So you think doctors are more likely to do a C-section not only because of the financial incentive, but because of concerns about malpractice. Why is it less likely that a doctor would be subject to a malpractice suit or a malpractice complaint if he or she does a C-section as opposed to a traditional birth?
So there's multiple factors. First of all, one of the biggest causes for malpractice in general is the patients not being satisfied, right? So one of the issues we have in medicine in general these days is that we don't have much time, right, to spend with the patient. And when you have a doctor that, is busy seeing a lot of patients, and again, that has to do with partially with compensation, right? So if we're obligated to see a patient every, X amount of hour, minutes, then we're limited in how much time we can spend with a patient and building a good rapport. So that has to do with malpractice. But at the same time, with a C-section, there's different complications versus a vaginal delivery where you can have if the baby is not in the right orientation, or it's harder to get the baby out, there's a shoulder that gets stuck in there, or something of that nature, which, you know, would not be likely to happen in a C-section, whereas obviously in C-section, being a major surgery, there's other possible complications. Now, there's other issues. Specifically with deliveries, I believe there's a statute where the parents can then sue the physician, and let's say there was a shoulder dysostosia where the shoulder was stuck and there was some compression of the shoulder during the delivery, and 16 years later their son can't potentially throw a 90 mile per hour pitch.
Interesting.
And they could say, oh, maybe it's because... So there's issues with that where there's years post delivery that the delivering physician is still
final question liable. Shy, and then I want to try and get to some other people as well, and if you want to call in 800-848-9222 I know you're not an OBGYN.
It's a great topic, by the way.
Thank you. No, I know you're not an OBGYN, but I'm going to ask your opinion anyway because you are the most qualified person on this phone call. Yeah, that is so my wife is expecting now. How do I know if a doctor tells her she needs a C-section, how do I or how does any expectant parent know if that's the responsible thing to do or not?
So very important in every patient doctor relationship. Not every doctor is good for every patient, as not every patient is good for every doctor. So when you choose a doctor, and here you choose a doctor over a certain amount of time, you want to, I'll make a caveat to that note, because specifically in choosing an OBGYN, if you choose a practice, keep in mind that your doctor may not deliver you. So you want to pick a practice that all the doctors have some sort of, there's practices that are known more for doing more C-sections than other practices, as I was mentioning with, for instance, I know within the religious communities, it's less likely. So you want to find a doctor that you feel, and obviously your wife feels comfortable with and with their decision-making. In the end of the day, you're going to have to give some trust to the doctor, and it's never wrong, by the way, to get a second opinion. So if someone gives, if your doctor tells you this is how it's going to be 100%, I would always question that. So if something doesn't feel right, even, there's nothing wrong in asking questions. The other way around, as a physician, I would like my patients to ask questions. I always say there's no such thing as a bad question. And you got to make a judgment call. But at the same time, obviously, there's medical, decisions that have to be made. But you have to also look at their track record and see if that physician, does he tend to do more C-section than other physicians? And you can have these discussions early on and see. And I don't know if the doctors would have specific data as far as statistics. But you want to talk to people in the community and see what kind of experiences they had.
All right, thank you, Shai. I'm up against the break here. I appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. If you have questions, if you want to add your two cents, you can. 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. If you're just tuning in, talking about a couple of stories I came across this week. One from Brazil. One from the United States. Brazil has an alarmingly high record of C-section deliveries, 84% in private hospitals, 55% overall. And the United States has among the world-leading rates of C-sections as well. And I guess I'm trying to figure out why, number one, and what are we doing about it, number two. So far, the only thing that answers number two is they're going to make hospitals publish their C-section rates. That is the only thing that I see that's being done. So I think this is, look, as someone whose wife is with child, maybe I take this a little more to heart than others might, but I think this is a pretty big problem for the United States, for Brazil, and for other countries like Qatar that have a high rate of C-sections. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Well, before we break, though, let me tell you a little bit about Trinity Rehab. You want to talk about responsible medical professionals, responsible healers. You need to look at the physical therapy specialists at Trinity Rehab. They will restore your freedom to live your life pain-free. This is cutting edge and state-of-the-art. They have something called the EPAT machine, which is FDA-approved non-surgical acoustic pressure wave technology. It's similar to what's used to break up kidney stones. It can also be used to break up scar tissue. It enhances healing. So whatever kind of chronic pain you have, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, tennis elbow, back pain, knee pain, neck pain, in just 3 5-minute sessions with this EPAP machine, you're going to be virtually pain-free. No prescription needed to get started. How great does that sound? They have locations in Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, and Woodbridge. So give Trinity Rehab a call, 1-800-518-0977. That's 1-800-518-0977. Or you can go to the website, trinity-rehab.com.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Singing Truth Hurts. Well, here is an uncomfortable truth. The United States is one of the world leaders in C-sections. Now, I think the world leader in C-sections is Brazil, although some countries it's tough to get statistics out of. But you have it. We're right up there. That's the point. And we're way above what medical professionals say is a safe rate of C-sections. So Brazil C-section rate, I find, is just alarming. And the fact that it's now become the norm, so much so that people are actually scheduling parties around it, I think says a lot about the culture of healthcare in those industries. So I'm curious why you think this is the case and what we can do about it. 800-848-9222. And look, I want to make clear, I'm not anti-cesarean section. I was born as a cesarean section myself, and sometimes this can be a life-saving procedure. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Let me begin with Leo in Manhattan. Hello, Leo.
Hi, Frank. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Frank, I'm going to talk from my personal experience. As a father of three, I know there is an aspect that makes the women maybe lean towards the cesarean thing. I'm going to try to use language we can air on the radio.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes. If young couple with no kids have perfect matching of their private parts, inner and outer diameter, I can tell you that after three kids, natural born, the match is not there anymore.
Understood. So you think this is women not wanting...
The women's size is getting bigger with every natural birth. On the other side, with cesarean, you're just skipping that part of...
Understood. So you think this, in part, this high rate of cesarean sections could be due to women wanting to preserve the way their private parts were pre-birth?
It's part of it. It's one of the aspects why maybe another one could be comparing the painfulness of natural birth and the cesarean. That could be another aspect. But that one I know for sure. Some women are worrying about this, and especially if we're talking about multiple kids, its issue.
Well, I've heard that as well. I've heard that theory, Leo, and I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the precise language that you've used in discussing a sensitive subject. Believe me, 800-848-9222. So far we have three theories, right? We have the theory, and look, all of these could be correct in the United States. And I was just doing some other research here. China has a pretty high rate of cesarean birth as well. So you have Brazil, you have China, you have South Korea, you have Chile, Mexico, and Turkey. Those are the countries that are ahead of us. The lowest cesarean rates are Iceland, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Israel, and the Netherlands. So when you look at the fact that C-sections tend to be very common in some countries, including ours, and not so common in others, you realize women give birth in these countries the same way. The difference is the medical culture. The difference might be the mentality. So we have three theories so far. One, the fact that doctors are concerned with malpractice suits. We have two, the fact that there's a financial incentive. Doctors are paid more to do a C-section than a traditional birth, and I think that ought to change if that's the case, which it appears to be. And three, the point that the caller made up, a woman likes her private parts to be as they were before they gave birth, not significantly different, to put it mildly. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Jacqueline is in Queens. Hello, Jacqueline.
Yes, I'm 82, and I've seen a lot of changes that the younger generation hasn't seen. The American Indian women used to go in the water, and they would give birth to a healthy child. Today, our world is so confused, poisoned, ugly, and violent, and overpopulated. We have totally removed ourselves from anything that is natural. So there's something more to this fast movement, what different from, you know, what is healthy and normal and less troubled as the world is today. Something higher, maybe, that children don't want to be born, we're moving too fast, or it's just a sick world today compared to the way it used to be.
Well, what do you mean when you say children don't want to be born?
Well, there's a higher things. Perhaps there's something so high that they're entering a world that is so overpopulated, so poisoned, so different and ugly than when it was when people were more natural, less populated, less polluted, and closer to the natural order.
I have to tell you, Jacqueline, you caused me to think about something that would have never occurred to me, so I'm glad you called, and hopefully we can...
Yeah, because you're intelligent, and I know you're not buying a lot of this stuff today. Well, and, you know, you have to respect age, because we have seen such difference, you know, in 82 years.
Well, thank you, Jacqueline. Appreciate the call. 800-848-9222. Nikki is in Manhattan. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Good. I was just wondering if you came across any statistics about uncomplicated births, whether the ratio is higher with cesarean sections than with natural births, because I would bet it is.
Well, so I'm not sure I understand the first part of your question. If the rate of complications is higher with cesarean sections versus natural births?
No, the reverse.
So take me from the beginning. I'm lost.
Okay, I would guess that there are a lot more complications and perhaps ill effects on the babies from natural births than there are from the cesarean births.
I think you may be onto something, Nikki. I don't know if there are statistics on that. I'm sure there are. I'm going to have to look into that and research that. Certainly an interesting point. 800-848-9222. Burham in Brooklyn. Hello, Burham.
Hey, Frank, love the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I had two kids. Back in 2015, I had my son, and a few years ago, I had my daughter. When I had my son, we had Obamacare and everything lined up. And the experience was, so before we went in, my wife said she didn't want a cesarean. She was deathly afraid of that. She didn't want it. So I committed myself to making sure that didn't happen. I'm not going to say what hospital we went to, but
we felt
very pressured by the hospital to have a cesarean section with my son. Very pressured. Right down to where when she signed the waiver not to have a cesarean, they had two nurses over her shoulder telling her she's going to hurt herself, hurt the baby, the
wrist,
and blah, 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 blah. And when she signed the waiver, the whole story changed. Suddenly, she could sit up if she wanted to. The monitors didn't have to be wired. They were wireless. So the whole story changed. And she pushed out my son an hour later.
And she was healthy and your son was healthy.
Yeah, everything worked out. Everything worked out.
You know, it's so funny. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. No.
When I had my daughter, the insurance company had gone out of business that we had, I guess because of Obamacare and that. But I just walked into the hospital and had no insurance. Now, my son's labor was 12 hours, and they tried to pressure us into a cesarean. My daughter was 36-hour labor, and it didn't even come up.
Yeah, I see. So because you didn't have insurance, the insurance company was not going to pay them these lucrative fees for a C-section is what you're implying, I think.
That's what I suspected.
Well, that is really interesting, and I appreciate the call as a father-to-be, and I appreciate your perspective, and I'm glad everything worked out, and thank you. It's funny. You know what I've heard before? I've heard that, you know, you have to be the hospital that you deliver in will try to pressure you to do different things. They'll try and pressure you to nurse right away, even if you don't want a nurse. They'll pressure you to have the baby with you right away and sleep with you, even if you're not necessarily ready. And I've had friends who are new parents who've said, multiple friends, people that don't know one another, who've all said, you know, you've got to be your wife's advocate. You've got to stick up for her. None of them that I've spoken to so far have mentioned C-sections. They've mentioned nursing. They've mentioned the baby sleeping in the same room as the mother. But nobody's mentioned C-section. So it's interesting that Burham is saying that his wife was pressured with that first child with insurance to have a C-section. So interesting to me. We'll take a few more of your calls in just a minute. We'll cover some other topics as well. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano with you until 5 o'clock this morning. Hey, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, we had a discussion about narcissism. Some people saying that Governor Andrew Cuomo is a narcissist. Some people have said that Donald Trump is a narcissist. My wife has said from time to time that I'm a narcissist. My ex-girlfriend has said that I'm a narcissist. So chances are there's probably more than a kernel of truth to the things that they're saying. So we're going to have a discussion of narcissism at 3:30. I'm going to be joined by H.G. Tudor, who is an author and a YouTuber and a self-described narcissistic sociopath. He's going to join me. We're going to talk a little bit about what narcissism is, how you can identify narcissism in yourself and in your partner, and in other people, people in the workplace, and how to handle a narcissist. So we're going to get into that and a whole bunch of other things. And then my friend Susan Rochester Zaccone, a terrific children's author and producer, she's going to be on at in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll play Stump the Audience at 3 o'clock if you want to win a prize. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I wake up usually in the afternoon, and yesterday was no exception. Woke up around 3 o'clock-ish. And I'm, you know, when I wake up, probably how you wake up. I'm in a t-shirt and I'm in pajama bottoms. And I'm not usually looking like I'm ready to entertain anybody. But when I got up yesterday, I see that I hear that my wife is talking to someone else. And I hear it's a guy. And I hear them talking about pricing. So I said, uh-oh. She's got someone over that she's going to buy something for to improve the house. And I don't want this fella ripping her off. Not that I'm the best consumer. I'll buy absolutely anything. So I said, all right. I know what I'm going to do. First of all, now I know I can't be prancing around the kitchen in my pajamas. So I throw on my bathrobe. And when I have my unshaven look and this one particular type of bathrobe, I could kind of give off a little bit of a Tony Soprano vibe. Although the less I say, the better, because as soon as I open my mouth, then you realize that I know nothing about anything and will pay any price for anything. So I make my way down there in my bathrobe. And my plan is that, you know, maybe he'll see me. He won't try to rip her off in terms of price or anything. And I meet this fellow. And apparently, they're having a discussion about our gutters. You know, the gutters that are on your roof that collects leaves. I don't even know what gutters do. I guess that's what they do. They're having a discussion about gutters and replacing the gutters and adding something else to the gutters. I don't understand it. I don't know about it. I don't want to know about it. In spite of what my friend Kevin McKay says, where he says repeatedly, if I just learn a couple of household terms and how to fix things, then people would not try to take advantage of me. I'm sure that's true, but I'm not willing to spend the hour a week on HGTV or whatever home improvement show that he recommends in order to do that. So lo and behold, he gives this whole presentation. And the only thing, he's showing me what's in our gutters now, right? He says, this is what you have. This is why it's, and he seems like a really nice guy, actually. So this is what you have. This is what's spiking. This is what's causing your problem. I said, problem? I didn't even know we had a problem. I have no problems with the gutters. And he says, this is what you have. Then this is what you're going to get. And then he's describing this material. It's called a leaf filter or something. See, this is what it's made of. They make hernia meshes out of this. Nothing will happen to this. It's you won't ever have to clean your gutters again. It keeps you off the ladder. It comes with a lifetime guarantee. And then he says $3,000. Whoa, $3,000. Excuse me. $3,000 in money that I don't have right now. I need a few more AC trips to get to $3,000. So my answer is very simple, which is no. I mean, this is not something I knew that we even needed. So my life will not be significantly improved by it, and my life will be significantly improved if I get to hold on to whatever pittance of, you know, whatever few dollars that I have. So as he's giving his whole presentation, which included props, which included a whole bunch of enthusiasm, it reminded me so much of the scene in Moonstruck, which is one of the great films of all time, where Vincent Jardinia's character, who's sort of a high-end plumber, he is explaining to this couple why their pipes are going to be so much. You remember the scene. It's about 30 years old, but it's timeless.
Well, Mr. Castorini, what do you think?
$10,800.
That seems like a lot.
Look, there are three kinds of pipe. There's the kind of pipe you have, which is garbage. And you can see where that's gone. Then there's rocks, which is very good. Unless something goes wrong. And something always goes wrong. And then there's copper, which is the only pipe I use. It costs money. It costs money because it saves money.
I think we should follow Mr. Castorini's advice, Art.
I swear to you, when he was doing this whole presentation with props and everything, I thought I was in the movie Moonstruck. So I don't know if I said verbally no, or if he thought I was just being kind of a hardball negotiator, which I was not, because I didn't know we needed new gutters. So my wife sees the look on my face. She takes me aside into a different room. Now, I didn't even know this guy was coming yesterday, but she takes me aside into a different room. She said, listen, something we really need. This is the, I said, well, good. Okay. Well, let's get a second opinion and see how much they charge. And she says, no, this is the only company that does it. I said, what? How could it be the only company that does it? She said, trust me, I've researched it. I've looked. And it's the only company that does it. And apparently he was originally going to charge something like $5,000. And then she negotiated him down to $3,000, which I guess is a pretty good deal. She said she had budgeted about $2,500 for it. So to get it down to $3,000, I guess, is somewhat in our price range. I'm just going to use it as leverage because I'm on this Baccarat hot streak. I'm just going to use it as leverage to get a trip to Atlantic City scheduled pronto. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Joan, who has been patiently holding. Hello, Joan.
Yes, hello there, Frank. I wanted to say that I'm a much older woman, and my husband was a gynecologist, and he was quite a bit older than I was, so it would bring him to about 120 today.
Wow.
Gone, of course.
God bless you both.
Yes, and he was a gynecologist, and I remember he told me he was also European, and he never had a caesarean case in his life. And he said the reason why they do it is because they have to wait too long if they do natural birth.
Ah.
They have to stick around. You see, this way, I think somebody's going to shoot me for this, saying it. But anyway, he told me that's why they had cesareans very often. I'm not saying there is a time when you have to do it. But the reason he said they do this so very much is because they don't want to wait.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yes,
thank you for sharing that, Joan.
I remember it very well because I found it very interesting, too.
Oh, no. Yes. That is pretty interesting. And I buy that completely.
Yeah. Oh, yes, but it is so.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing your husband's wisdom, even posthumously with me. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Hey, little girl, won't you meet me at the schoolyard gate? I got backstage pass to the biggest show in town, so honey, don't you make me late.
Loggins and Messina, my music. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, don't miss your chance to win a hat. And don't miss your opportunity to hear about narcissism at 3:30. I'll also talk with Susan Rochester Zucconi in the 4 o'clock hour about how children have fared during this pandemic and remote learning and things of that sort. 800-848-WABC. A little bit later, we'll cover a wide variety of subjects as well throughout the morning. I have a lot of interesting things on my list that I think you're going to find engaging. Larry in Brooklyn has been patiently holding. Hello, Larry. Larry? Larry! All right, well then, Paula in New Jersey has been patiently holding. Hello, Paula.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
My pleasure. Very quickly, before I get to where I called, I have to tell you that while I was listening to you tell your story about the leaf gutters, I nearly fell off my bed laughing so hard. You are a born storyteller.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Maybe I won't find a new career after all.
Maybe not. Stick with what you're doing. It's great. So as to the C-section subject, both of my pregnancies were high risk, and so I was told that if I did not follow my doctor's instructions each time, I was going to end up with C-sections. And I was so terrified of having one that I did exactly what I was told, which in the first pregnancy involved spending 2 months flat on my back doing just about nothing. So, yes, I was very fortunate I was able to avoid that. I think that in the case of women who have C-sections because they wish to avoid, to use the delicate language, overusage of their womanly interior, this is a very sad and a very self-oriented thing. I would rather go through the natural process that is natural for a woman, and then you heal as you should be.
Sure.
Then have some awful scar on me. I was very interested that you chose this subject tonight because I researched this years ago, and I believe that the reason we have these high rates in America is one reason and one reason only, and that's for the doctors to make money.
Interesting. Interesting. Thank you, Paula. 800-848-WABC. Mike is in Queens. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Frank. How you doing? I can't resist on the leaf gutter. Since we're talking about doctors in the hospitals, the commercial they run on TV talks about the number one cause of injuries in ERs are people on ladders. So that's a quick point there. As to why Brazil is so much higher than the United States, I had a couple of thoughts. It echoes a lot of your callers. I would guess there's a lot of rural areas there. And as one of your callers said, the doctors wouldn't be able to we have departments in the United States. You go to obstetrics and they just deliver babies. Doctors in Brazil might have to handle a baby and then go handle a heart attack or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd also have to have the epidural drugs. And the people then would not want to leave. Like one caller said, they just take too long. The other thing is, and the caller that just spoke there, there used to be a term, I haven't heard it in many years, but they said we can give you a nice bikini scar is how they would talk about it. So it almost makes it sound like our society is everywhere in the world. It's cookie cutter, in and out, get everybody out fast. So,
now, Mike, that's an excellent point. I had not considered the rural nature of Brazil, but that's probably a good point. Maybe there's a lack of or fewer specialists in Brazil, and people sort of have to do everything. And to your point, and to like previous caller said, trying to get everybody in and out. Makes sense to me, Mike. Thank you. 800-848-9222. You know where we have? And we'll move on. But what we haven't covered, and if you have ideas and you want to continue this, you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. We have not covered what some of the solutions are here. And I would be very interested in that as well. 800-848-9222. Hey, you know who's going to be here tomorrow? Dr. Sky, Steve Cates. I'm very much looking forward to that. And one of the subjects that I'm going to raise with him, I mean, I never seem to have enough time with him. The guy makes space and aviation and astronomy and weather sound just so compelling. And I've said before, he's got the best set of pipes of anybody in radio. What a voice. If I had a set of pipes like him, forget about it. I'd be much further along. But one of the stories that I wanted to bring to your attention, I'm going to bring up with him tomorrow, is that NASA is at risk of losing a foothold in orbit after the end of the International Space Station. So the International Space Station is coming to an end. And so without an operating base in space, NASA's plan to shift from being a sole provider of services in orbit to a customer of companies operating there is in serious jeopardy, because NASA is hoping that instead of running its own space station, it'll have the option to send its astronauts to privately run space stations in orbit by the time the International Space Station ends. Now, NASA this month put out a final call asking for companies to submit their ideas for space stations so they could build and operate where astronauts could visit and perform all sorts of experiments. Those space stations would need to be up and running by the time the International Space Station comes to an end, which is by 2030 or earlier. So NASA is going to award money to the companies that are chosen for certain milestones, but the agency isn't going to fully fund the development of these space stations. That's according to the request for proposal that, you know, that they put out. Now, my question is, what if no company wants to come forward and build one of these space stations without NASA paying for it? Where does that leave us? I think space travel is so important. I think space exploration is so important. And I think, honestly, and I'm not saying this because I voted for him twice, but I think Donald Trump's implementation and creation of Space Force ultimately 20, 30, 40 years from now is going to go down in history as one of the greatest and most significant aspects of his legacy. I mean that. And I think space is important. And too often, it seems, over the last few decades, we've dropped the ball. All right. We'll continue with some other interesting things next hour. In the meantime, in the words of the great Bob Barker, you can help control the pet population and make sure you get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. So, I've talked about this before. Friends are very important to me. Friendship is very important to me. Relationships are everything to me. I put in a lot of work into maintaining and building relationships and friendships. And it's something I take very seriously. And it doesn't come without a great deal of work. Friend asks you for something. If you're a real friend, you got to try and be there for them. And I'll never forget, maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, before I met my wife, I was dating another woman, and we were together a while, maybe 2.5 years, almost three years, I want to say. And she said to me one day, I think it's possible to have too many close friends. And she said, I think you're there. And I understood it from her perspective, because every day it seemed like there was a different obligation, a different birthday party that I had to go to, or a different friend I had to help move, or a friend I had to pick up at the airport, or a friend that would have been insulted if I didn't stop by their party, or you get the picture. So I was very interested in some data that came out from what they call the Survey Center on American Life. And lo and behold, I am these days the exception. The number of close friendships that Americans have has significantly declined over the past several decades. Rob, our engineer extraordinaire, Rob, how many close friends would you say you have? Close friends. 10. You're picking 10? 10, give or take? Okay. Molly, how about you? Close friends, how many? I'm not hearing you if her mic is on.
I wouldn't be able to count, honestly.
Well, so repeat the
social
beginning.
Butterfly.
So you have so many close friends that you wouldn't be able to count?
Well, I mean, then you get into the nitty gritty. Am I really going to chart out who's a close friend? Like, what's the criteria?
Well,
for a
I mean,
close
it, that's
friend?
Up to you. What would you consider, whatever your definition of a close friend is, how many would you say you have?
I'll go with the 10 number 10. Two. We'll okay. say 10.
I would say I'm at where you guys are. I'm at 10 or 11. 30 years ago, in 1990, 33% of Americans were in the same boat that Molly, Rob, and I were in, where you had 10 or more close friends. 33%. Now, that's a big number. That's an even bigger percentage than the percentage of women that are delivering via C-section. Where are we today in 2021? I should have had the fast forward to the future sound effect ready, but welcome to the present day. 2021, only 13% of Americans have 10 or more close friends. 12% have between 6 and 9. 13%, this is now, present day, have 5. 11% have 4. And the biggest percentage say they have 3. 17% of Americans say they have 3 close friends. Now, the alarming thing here is, in 1990, do you know how many Americans said they had 0 close friends? 3%. That's 30 years ago. Today, you know how many Americans, what percentage say they have 0 close friends? 12%. 12%. That is pretty alarming. In my judgment, I find that almost as alarming as the C-section statistics we were going through. Think of that. 12% have nobody that they can really confide in other than maybe a priest or a therapist. 12% have nobody that they can count on when the chips are down. 12% of them have nobody that they can call when there's a crisis. Or celebrate when something goes well in their life. That made me awfully sad. So this new research shows that Americans have fewer friends than in the past overall and are far less likely to have a best friend. I always hated that term, best friend. Even when I was a kid, I hated that term. To Molly's point, what makes somebody a best friend? It's so it reminds me like six-year-old girls have best friend. Best friend. No, you have closer friends. A best friend, come on, who's to say you're a better friend than somebody else? Best friend. So at a time of excruciating mental and societal stress, a lot of folks are saying this is yet another sign that we are breaking apart as a country. And unfortunately, this friendship drought could get even worse with more people working remotely or hybridly. I have a lot of friends that still haven't been back to work. My wife, for instance, she's working from home indefinitely. I know a lot of folks that are either working from home indefinitely or they're going into the office 2 days a week and they're working from home 3 days a week. That means they're not going to really build strong bonds at the workplace, not going to build strong bonds via Zoom. I don't think so. It doesn't replace the water cooler or coffee machine conversation. So these two key findings by the Survey Center on American Life, which is a project of the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative think tank, so everybody knows, the number of close friends has declined from 33% in 1990 to 13% now, not counting relatives. In 1990, 75% of us said we had a, quote, best friend. This year, only 59% said that. Now, Daniel Cox, who's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute who conducted this research, he told the news source Axios that as he's discussed the findings on podcasts and online, people get it, and everyone had their own anecdote about it. He's quoted as saying, "We realize the importance of friendship, and we're just not investing the time," he said, adding that it's another way the nation is, quote, vulnerable. So I'd like to ask you, some people may think this is not as much of a problem. And I'll read you some analysis from somebody that, you know, that thinks that. And I might invite Dan Cox on this show. But I'd like to ask you, what do you make of this? Why do you think so many fewer Americans have a lot of close friends these days? And do you think this is cause for concern? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I think one factor has to be technology. You know, when I was a child, if you wanted to do something fun after school, you'd go out and you'd play ball in the street. You'd play stickball, you'd play football, street hockey, whatever the case may be, basketball. Now, it seems to me that a lot of young people, they end up instead playing video games. And I don't know, unless I'm wrong, maybe that you can do this with video games, but I don't know that you can build the same sort of deep connections interacting with people on a video game platform as you can when you're socializing with them in person. 800-848-9222. But even if I'm right about that, which there's no guarantee that I am, even if I'm right about that, that doesn't explain the lack of adults who have a lot of close friends. So if you're friends with Molly, Rob, or me, and given the amount of friends that the three of us have, chances are there's a pretty good chance that if you're listening to the show, you are, then count yourself among the lucky ones, because this is being described by the American Enterprise Institute as a friendship crisis. Where do you think this leads us as a country? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Tom in Tom's River, what do you make of all this?
Hey, how's it going, Frank? Good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk to you.
You know, I want to limit my discussion, at least on my end. I'll listen to you after I hang up, to maybe only 60 seconds. But because the reason why I want to do that is because it's too much of a subject, right? It's so big. I mean, how many people are in the world right now? 8 billion?
I around that, yeah.
And like, I forgot, I was looking at a study, like some amount of billion have a smartphone. So obviously it's showing you right away that there's something going on. I'm just going to throw out a couple things now. Believe me, I'm going to try to leave it the same thing. The average American is so asleep today just from this sun. When was the last time a husband and wife walked in the street and, you know, one said to the other, hey, Bob or Melissa, you ever think about the sun? Like, we're so dehumanized. We spoke about this last time for like 5 minutes. And, you know, the subject now of friends you're talking about, it's great. It's not the root of the problem. You know, it's the dehumanization of the human being. I mean, you walk in the city, Frank, you know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's looking down and we're not communicating. I one time looked up on the computer, New York City, NYC, 1911. And you see every single woman had her collarbone covered down to the sleeve. Every man had hat. And I actually noticed one interesting thing, and I'm going to end with this. That is the communication between people. Men from the other side of the road were like flinching to each other and literally whispering amongst the honks of the horn. So look, we're changing, we're dehumanized, this is just part of the game of life. And there are people who know about this. There are selected individuals who know how to actually live in America with all the technology, but they still know how to live right. And is there some upsides to technology? Of course there is. Look, you can call the cops if something goes wrong. You know, if there's a distant relative, you can speak. But let me stop there and just say that it's a very deep subject, and it's, you know, very worthwhile to speak about.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate your perspective, especially that 1911 situation. Now, I want to make clear. So Tom views this as a pretty serious problem. I view this as a pretty serious problem. The gentleman that I quoted from the American Enterprise Institute, he seems to view it as a pretty serious problem. But not everybody shares that this is a problem. Kate Murphy is a Texan. She's the author of the book You're Not Listening. And she wrote an article for the New York Times called The Pandemic Shrank Our Social Circles. Let's keep it that way. And this is what she wrote. And I could see Kate is sort of where my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, Mallory was. But she's the one that made the remarks about having too many close friends. She writes this. People want fewer and better friends. Pre-pandemic, we were in the grips of a loneliness epidemic. That loneliness wasn't necessarily from being alone. In fact, it was often a feeling of alienation while in the presence of other people. She says, you can be friendly with a lot of people, but you can only have a few good friends. An occasional lunch, backslap at a cocktail party, or exchange of texts is sociability, but not social support. When your social life becomes a mad dash between events driven by FOMO, that's fear of missing out. You know, I didn't even know that term until recently. I think my wife taught me that term. You don't have the time or emotional energy to develop those truly meaningful relationships and attachments that are essential to human health and happiness. And of course, engaging with people digitally is a poor facsimile. The pandemic showed us that for sure. That's an interesting point. And maybe she's right. And maybe Mr. Cox and Tom and me are wrong. So this trend has been going on a while. There's a great book. Robert Putnam wrote it. It's called Bowling Alone: The Collapse and Revival of American Community. And it was published 20 years ago. And so much that's in that book deals with exactly that. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Bobby is in Woodlawn. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, Bobby.
You remember me, I think.
Ah, yes. My friend Bob Gilmartin from The Rock.
Hey, don't use my last name. I'll be our. Anyway, friendships are forever. For instance, you allowed me to come on the air one time at a different station. We didn't even speak to each other for about 6-7 years. We did, you know, hello, goodbye, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, the show went off, I believe, with aplomb because we knew each other.
Well, I agree, Bobby. I think that you can kind of you do have some money in the bank when it comes to relationship building. I have a very close friend who I believe you've met. I used to bring him to The Rock once in a while, named Kyle. I feel like I used to see Kyle every day. Now I feel like I see Kyle maybe 6 times a year. But every time I see him, we basically pick up from where we left off. So I think there's something to that.
Real good friends can do that 6 and 7, 8 years and pick it right up because they love them. And it's an independent thing. Don't worry about friendship. Be a friend.
Yeah.
Simply
I think that's a great philosophy, Bob, and I hope we can connect in person sooner rather than later. Let's talk soon.
You got it, Bob.
Appreciate you calling. 800-848-9222. It's funny that he said that, and it's something that I hadn't considered, and I don't know that it's reflected in these statistics by the American Enterprise Institute. There's a film, a Spike Lee film, or Spike Lee joint, they like to call it, called Five Bloods. And I talked about it at the time that I saw it. I'm not going to get into a whole review of it. But you had these five guys that – or four of them, I think – that served in Vietnam together. And they connect, and I don't think they've spoken 30 or 40 years. And you get the sense, to Bob's point, that they kind of just picked up right where they left off. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Jenny on Staten Island. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Frank. I'm so glad that I got you. You better send that guy packing. I just paid $750 to have my gutters done. There's a wonderful company called Carbone and Gorman, and they're on Staten Island. They're a reputable company. They come and they do the work quickly, efficiently, and they don't rip your heart out. Tell your wife she's being ripped off.
But will they give me a lifetime guarantee like these leaf filter people
yes.
will? They will.
Yes. You what you pick out, and then you will, and that's entirely too much. That's entirely. I'm 88 years old, Frank. I've been following you since you were with Red Beret, Curtis. Mm. And I listen to you every single night. I'm telling you, for your own good, like your mom, get in touch with Carbone and Gorman.
I'm writing it down here, Jenny. Thank you very much.
And tonight is one of your better programs. I could have answered a couple. I had two sections. There were so many things that I could have spoken with you about tonight. But I don't want to hold you on. You have other people to speak to. But you're getting ripped off royal.
Well, that is, I appreciate that very much, Jenny. Thank you. Hopefully I'll see you around the island.
I hope so. And also, Frank.
Yes.
Talk about Bill Pepitone once in a while. He's
sure.
A great guy.
I said I'd be happy to have Bill on the air if he wants to come on. That'd be fine with me.
I hope he does. He's an excellent young man. He's having a big thing Thursday night at the Marina Cafe between 7 and 9. So why don't you run down and say hello to him?
Well, I'm actually going to be at the doctor's appointment with my wife on Thursday night around that time. So I don't know that I can make that. But if you want to pass on my regards, if you're going, you could please tell him to email me or text me. I'm not hard to get a hold of. We have a lot of mutual friends, so he's welcome to reach out to me anytime.
Okay. And good luck to you and your wife.
Thanks, Jenny.
Hopefully she doesn't need a section. Hopefully she can have it natural.
I appreciate the call, Jenny. Thank you. 1-800-848-9222. Mitchell is in Brooklyn. Hello, Mitchell.
Hello, Frank.
Hey, Mitchell, what's on your mind?
You remember me?
Give me a hint. Where did we last speak?
I spoke to you on a few topics. I'm a Jewish fellow from Brooklyn.
Fellow from Brooklyn. Of course I remember you.
Well, I have different... Anyway, I'm just going to tell you one thing. As far as the mayor, I didn't want to call for that. I want to tell you... Let me tell you, you're right about the technology because it's brought down in the Bible about that, what will be the end of the days with all these things that are going on. I'm not, you know, I'm talking normal, but I want to tell you something else. There was a book written, and I found it very interesting. Was in the actually, I heard it on the radio about, I would say, let's, I'm just saying 30 years ago. It was called about air conditioning. What air conditioning had an effect on relationships, and you don't think about it. But people in the South, in different places, like in New York City, the guy wrote a book about how it affected. Why? It used to be, let's say, in the South, they would hang out on their, in front of the residents on the porches, and people would talk with each other. But what happened was, with the invent of the air conditioner, and people started to buy air conditioning, now people are staying inside to cool off, right? So now they weren't communicating. It was very interesting. So you are on target as far as the, as far as that. So people found their cell phones as friends. I just want to say, as an observant Jew, on Shabbos, we have at least no phones for about 26 hours. I'm speaking about the, you know, ultra-Orthodox that don't do, no, you know, they play by the rule.
Yeah, well...
And Shabbos is like a honeymoon with God. It's, like, really great. So there you at least have that. I'm not saying we have in the weekdays, too, but, of course, we have the technology. We go, you know, with the times, the sign of the times. We have all that. But at least when it comes Shabbos, we put away our phones. And, of course, there is Hatzalah for emergencies, for health issues.
Sure.
You're allowed to have that. But that's where you could communicate with people. When you have the cell phones and you go out to the restaurant with your wife and the kids or this.
Mitchell, I agree. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy when people do
that. A lot of times just put away my cell. I realize I'm much better off. Try it. You're much better off without it.
Mitchell, it's a
good. Especially you do radio, so radios are much more intelligent venue than any other, like TV or anything like that.
Well, except for me, but I agree with that,
it's
Mitchell.
Communication. You're in the real communication.
Mitchell,
and that's where there's a breakdown. Me personally, I have a lot of friends in all different areas of the world that, you know, that I was in Canada, in Israel, in different places. I even was in Haiti. Believe it or not. So wherever I go, I make, you know, friends. I even said, oh, bless the island there. They have a lot of fun.
Where were you at the time the Haitian president was assassinated, Mitchell?
Which Haitian? Which one? What do you want? I was in Haiti. You know, I went on Haiti for a mission.
Very interesting way you answered that question, Mitchell. We're gonna keep an eye on you, Mitchell. We're going to keep an eye on you. Add him to the list of suspects. Now, unfortunately, he didn't call from his mobile phone, so we can't track him. He's calling from a landline. I believe that was actually a payphone, so we can't track him. But we are going to send a transcript of that call to the proper authorities in Haiti in case Mitchell has any information leading to the recovery of some of these presidential, these Haitian presidential assassins. So, well, his point though about, but he went on a little bit of a tangent, but his first point about air conditioning, I thought was absolutely fascinating. And it's something that I never would have considered, but he's exactly right. In the era before air conditioning, and I'm not really that much of an air conditioning guy. I mean, we have air conditioning, but, you know, I don't live and die by it. In the era before air conditioning, you'd sit on your stoop. Now, when it's hot out, you go inside to cool off. He's exactly right about that. Air conditioning does serve the purpose of making people a little bit more insular. That's certainly true. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC if you want to comment on the friendship crisis or anything else we're talking about. You're welcome to weigh in and do so. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Carol in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Great.
I have three very good friends. People that I consider very good friends. Two of them I've known for like 2 years. And one of them I just met when I moved to this building that I live in now, like 3 years ago. But they're all my best friends. And I have about 15 acquaintances. I just make friends with people easily.
Well, you're a very friendly person. I don't doubt that. And my hope, and thank you for the call, Carol, my hope in doing the segment was not necessarily so that people can compare the size of their friendship circles, because I don't see the value in that necessarily. But it's to explore why. You know, Larry King's producer, who I interviewed on this show the day after Larry died, and you know, she was a good guest. I'm actually going to invite her back. But she said to me, and I think she said it on other shows as well, that the most important question that Larry King ever asked was why. And that's the question I always try to ask. Why do we have so many fewer friends? And is it a bad thing? As I believe it is, and Mr. Cox from the American Enterprise Institute believes it is, and Tom and Tom's River seems to imply that it is, or is it a positive thing? As the author of that book said, she said it's better to have fewer friends and closer friends, not racing to event after event for fear of missing out. That is sometimes the way I feel. Sometimes I feel maybe my life would be improved if I had a much smaller circle of friends. 800-848-WABC. Jeremiah in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello.
How you doing? This is a very interesting topic that you're talking. I think there's something wrong with the essence of people nowadays. Let me give you a scenario. Suppose you're by a lake and you notice your dog, let's say your dog of 12 years, was in the lake and there was a stranger in the lake and they were both drowning and you only have one, you can only save one life. Who will you save? Will you save the stranger or will you save your dog? And the answer I got from most people is that they will save their dog first before they'll save the life of the stranger.
I would have to save the human. Unfortunately, I love animals, but I feel somewhat guilty saying this, but look, humans are humans and animals, as great as they are animals. So, I mean, I would save the human. I mean, hopefully I could save both, but yes. I mean, I would save the human.
Yes, me too. I will say that. But the answer I got from the majority of people, even my own relatives, was they would save the dog. Oh, because that's a member of society. And say, are you telling me you evaluate, you equate the life of a human being who's a stranger, never did anything to you, with a dog, even if it's your dog of, let's say, 10 years, 11, 12 years? I mean, I think that's the reason why we're having fewer friends. There's something out there. I don't know what it is. Maybe in video games, movies. the certain type of lifestyle. You know, it is better having quality friends. I agree. We're having less, but I think people are becoming more, how do you call it, more closed in and anti-people. They would rather save the life of a dog than the life of a stranger.
Well, that's pretty – we might have to do that as a talk topic one of these days, Jeremiah. That's such an interesting question, and I'm curious how people would respond to that as well. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC if you want to weigh in on the subject. We'll delve into some other things later. We'll talk about narcissism an hour from now, and then Susan Rochester Zaccone will be here in the 4 o'clock hour. And let me say hello to Gary on Staten Island. Hello, Gary.
Christopher Lash wrote a book called The Culture of Narcissism, and I highly recommend that title. When you're down and troubled, and you need a helping hand, and nothing is going right.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah. Your hands and reach. How's the rest of that? You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you. Winter, spring, summer, or fall. All you got a friend, Carole King. That's a song and a half, right?
Well, why did you stop? Winter, spring, summer, or fall?
Well,
and then you
I'm
stopped. You stopped after that verse. You didn't do the rhyming. All you have to do is call.
I did the best that I could.
Well, I think you have actually a nice voice, Gary. I'm pleasantly surprised.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Any thoughts on any of the subjects we're covering tonight, Gary, or this morning?
Oh, many thoughts. I went to Ivy League. I'm like one of the most thoughtful persons around. I hate to brag.
Well, I mean, that goes without saying.
Well, you don't want me to lie, do you?
No,
went to Cornell.
No, I would never want you to lie.
I did college radio.
I am not the least bit surprised by that, Gary. Gary, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, come on.
Oh, there you go. I got you now. Go ahead. Oh, no. You see, you're coming in and out, Gary.
See, I know I don't. Friends, again, I you know, if you want a friend, get a dog.
Well, that's what Lyndon Johnson used to say, right?
LBJ. Roger Stone wrote about a book about him killing JFK.
I read the book. Gary, thank you for the call. I will speak with you soon. 800-848-9222. Hey, if you want a friendly disposition when it comes to your digestive tract, you know, I'm just realizing this now. I forgot yesterday to take Life Change Tea. I am going to double up my doses today. I'm going to do two in the morning or two at the beginning of the day when I get home, and then I'll do two after my nap or my sleeping, and then when I wake up in the afternoon, I'll do two. Life Change Tea is absolutely terrific. It's powerful. It's herbal. It's all natural. It gives you more energy without caffeine. It also tastes great and has no fillers, no GMOs, and it's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is, the tea that makes you go. You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And you can use the promo code FRANK when you order. If you do that, you'll get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in the United States. I drink it every day except yesterday. And I can tell you I have more energy. I haven't drank coffee except one cup on Saturday in 9 days. And I feel as energetic and effervescent as ever. This is a terrific product. I think if you try it, you'll be really pleased. And whatever other supplements you order on that website, getthetea.com, you will get to enjoy free shipping. GetTheTea.com, promo code FRANK. Try it. I think you'll like it.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A, Cola.
She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said hello.
The Kinks, a terrific song, and you know, an interesting song. The Kinks did a lot of things. I think they had to change the lyrics from Coca-Cola, which was in the original version of this song, because the BBC banned the song because it says. Lips just like Coca-Cola. But because of the BBC radio's policy against product placement, they were forced, the Kinks, to make a 6,000-mile round-trip flight from New York to London and back and to change the words to the generic Cherry Cola. For the single release, which is included on various compilation albums as well. Isn't that interesting? I think it is. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on anything we're covering. And look, you may not be able to tell it by listening to me, although maybe you can. Sounded like Jenny could. You are listening to a man with a new haircut. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I am yet to be complimented on it by anybody here. I thought for sure, you know, Rita Cosby is usually so attentive. She always, you do something different and she always notices. But no, nobody mentioned it. But that's okay. So I knew I was going to be in trouble this morning or yesterday morning when the only time they could fit me in was 10:45. Now, the barber that I'm currently going to, nice guy, it's literally around the corner from my house. It's walking distance. It's maybe a 10-minute walk, a 3-minute drive, and that's not an exaggeration. So I had an appointment for, I think 10:30. So I set my alarm for 10:15. And this is one of the things that I use the smart speaker Alexa for. And I'm not going to say Alexa much because I don't want her to start doing all sorts of weird things. If you're listening to me, for instance, if I say Alexa volume 10, I don't want her to make your broadcast of this show super loud. But Alexa wakes me up at 10:15 this morning. So I got home. I actually was super tired driving home yesterday. So I did whatever I do, and I urge you to do if you're driving and you're a little drowsy right now. I pulled over on the side of the road and took a nap, and then I drove home. So I got home after all that at about 20 to 9. Go to sleep, set my alarm for – maybe it's 9 o'clock by the time I get home. I set my alarm for 10:15. Wake up, 10:15. I'm still as tired as can be. And in my brain, I said to Alexa, Alexa, wake me up in 5 minutes. Set an alarm for 5 minutes from now. She does. So now it's about 10:20. And for whatever reason, I didn't get up. I slept. Slept, slept, slept. Does that ever happen to you? I feel like it's happened to me more times than it should. But I just slept. And then I woke up at around 11:20, probably close to an hour after my scheduled appointment for a haircut. And I race out of the house. And as I'm racing, I text my barber. I said, I'm sorry, I'm running late. And I had seen he had texted me previously, and he said that the guy before me came early. If I wanted to come early, I could. And I had to respond, I'm sorry, I just woke up, I'm running late, can I come in right now? And I didn't wait for a response. I just went in there. And he said, he saw me. I walked right in. He says, come on, come on, come on, sit down. And he does the haircut for me. And he says, just ignore that text message that I sent you. Because he had sent me a text. And I'm glad that I reacted the way that I did. He sent me a text saying, I can't see you now. Maybe we could do Thursday. So he was able to see me, and we had a good haircut experience. But then the battle, especially after all that adrenaline of running to the barber shop, of making small talk, trying to come up with small talk conversations. See, when you're on the radio, there's a lot of pressure to make small talk. If people know you do a talk show, they love to talk to you. And the favorite question when I meet someone that they have for me is, well, what do you talk about? The gutter guy asked me yesterday, what do you talk about? Well, how about you listen to the show? How about I can either do a private radio show for you right now and do 4 hours of commentary, interacting with callers, interviews, and whatever's on my mind, or you can just tune in. You can listen to the podcast, which is available whenever at fmwabc.com. I hate that. People ask, what did you talk about? What do you talk about? Well, tune in. Find out. Find out. I don't know what I'm talking about, as so many of you point out on a regular basis. So I get back home. I get the haircut, get back home, and I try to go back to sleep for a couple of hours. Now, that's tough. It's tough to go right back to sleep after you've been out of the house and about, even though I've only gotten maybe an hour or two of sleep in the morning. I finally was able to get back to sleep, and then woke up again around 3 o'clock when all the drama over the gutters was occurring. And then now you know the rest of the story. So we'll see what tomorrow brings. I don't think I have any reason to get up early tomorrow. I think I'm supposed to pre-tape something around 3:30 in the afternoon, but I'm certainly up by 3:30 anyway. So that's where we are. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Jeanette is here in New York City. Hello, Jeanette.
Oh, hi. It's Janet, actually.
Janet,
call
okay.
Me Jeanette. Actually, Jeanette is sort of nicer. It sounds so.
No, I like Janet. I like Janet. Janet's great.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Your story about Lola and the product placement. I never knew that story. And so you're saying it was the BBC, it wasn't Coca-Cola, that made them take the name out.
That is my understanding, yes.
Right. Because there are so many interesting stories about that. And I don't know if you were listening to Cousin Bruce. Oh, well, I won't ask you. I'm sure you listened to Cousin Bruce.
God's honest truth, Janet, I had friends over and I brought my radio out into the backyard and we sat around the fire pit and I listened to Cousin Brucey and I listened to the whole show, actually. I thought it was quite good.
Oh, it wasn't last week, though. I mean, it was several months ago that I was going to mention where he talked about the song, Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost,
in the bedpost
overnight.
Right. I remember the song. I played that song. I don't remember what Cousin Brucey said about it.
What he said was, the original words were, does your Wrigley's lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight? Because Wrigley's was the maker of, I guess, Stellar spearmint gum, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's Lonnie Donegan.
That was the original words. And I don't know whether they were sued or they got a very stern cease and desist letter from the Wrigley's lawyers. And they had, you know, because Wrigley's said, you know, what do you mean our chewing gum loses its flavor? It doesn't lose its flavor. Very bad advertising. So they had to take it out. And they turned it into just plain chewing gum.
Yeah. Well, so again, I'm just doing some quick research on this, Janet. And apparently the song is a cover version of Does the Spearmint Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost Overnight, which was first released in 1924. And the title and lyrics were changed in the UK because Spearmint is a registered trademark over there. And same situation as Coca-Cola. The BBC wouldn't play songs that mention trademarks.
Oh. Well, then I guess I heard it wrong, or Brucey got it a little wrong. But, so it didn't mention Wrigley's, but Spearmint, I guess, was enough of a trademark. So they had to change it to your chewing gum. But there's an interesting story also from the 1950s that I remember. An ad for Chock Full of Nuts Coffee. And the original jingle, and I heard it many times like this, was chock full of nuts is that Heavenly Coffee, Bitter Coffee, Rockefeller's Money Can't Buy. Mm. And that was played quite a lot. And then suddenly it became Millionaire's Money Can't Buy. And my father told me that Rockefeller had sued them to take their name out of it. Don't take my name in vain, said Mr. Rockefeller.
No. Yeah. It's clearly they changed it for a reason. And that probably yeah. is the reason. Well, thank you for the call, Janet. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Talk soon. 800-848-9222. So we had a caller the other day who, you know, and Molly will put up a summary of what they want to talk about. And the caller had a comment, and it was a little off topic. It was not when we were freewheeling like this, but it was a little off topic. It was about the, that's why I didn't go to it, a runaway bull. And so lo and behold, I have done a little more research into this. And this is a pretty interesting situation, straight out of Long Island. There's a runaway bull that's on the run after escaping from a farm in Mauritius. It's now been on the run for, I think, 8 days. So Barney, a 1,500-pound bull, escaped a fenced-in farm in Mauritius. So the Suffolk police said over the weekend that the bull with the gleaming dark coat was still on the loose after breaking free from the farm at Barnes Road. Since then, there have been reported sightings of the bull, including as far west as Stony Brook. So that is unbelievable. They've been searching for it on foot, on horseback, with helicopters, with drones, with thermal cameras. They even sent out a cow in heat and set up a horse pen loaded with grain. Nothing so far has worked despite keeping watch all day and using thermal and cellular night vision cameras. So rescuers hope to bring the animal, once they catch it, to a sanctuary. And so today there was a story in the New York Post. A Southampton restaurant wants to make a home for Barney the runaway bull. A trendy Southampton restaurant is steering funds towards finding a permanent home for Barney the runaway bull by hawking bull martinis. The bovine fugitive who dodged the slaughterhouse by busting out of a Manorville farm last week has since eluded police and animal rescue workers, but could have a home in the Hamptons when he's finally captured. Michael Pizzinos, the owner of NAIA Restaurant in Southampton's Capri Hotel. I think I've interviewed this gentleman. I think when I was doing the Long Island show, this might be a friend of John Catsimatidis or Todd Shapiro. I think I interviewed this gentleman. I don't recall. Don't quote me on that. He said, I was intrigued in that I'm a big animal rights activist as well as an animal lover. And I think it's Naya is the restaurant. Naya is in partnership with the Southampton Animal Shelter doing charitable events all the time. We just built a big dog park on the property. There's a large grassy area next to it where Barney can live out his days safely and comfortably. So the restaurant's raising money for the project by selling bull martinis. That is a brilliant publicity stunt. Absolutely brilliant. So I hope they catch this bull. And I hope, as they say, they're able to give this bull a nice home in Southampton and he doesn't end up in the slaughterhouse. I think if you run away from a farm, you've kind of earned your right not to be slaughtered. Am I right? The guy, the bull, ran away. He escaped from a fenced-in farm. Fenced in? How did he get past a fenced-in farm? I mean, that's something. That takes a lot of ingenuity, a lot of strength. So I say Barney should be pardoned. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk a little bit about narcissism. I do want to encourage you to please follow me on all forms of social media. The big three are Facebook, facebook.com/MoranoFan. Why should you follow me there? You should follow me there because I post articles there that are relevant to the subjects that we cover on this show. So if we just touch upon an article, whether it's the friendship crisis, whether it's Brazil and the C-sections, whether it's Barney the Runaway Bull, that's where I've posted that article, facebook.com/MoranoFan. You can find me on Twitter. Twitter is where is basically a stream of consciousness for me. If you want to know my thoughts at any given moment, check Twitter, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Instagram, which I probably use the least, I'm trying to get better with. It's where I'll post photos. Once I get a little thinner, I'm going to start posting more photos on there, but there's still a lot of great older photos on there, at Morano Vision on Instagram, M-O-R-A-N-O Vision. Now, we also have this Facebook group that if you're interested in having conversations with other fans of this show, or not even fans, people that listen to it, you want to go to Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters, and you can join the Facebook group. Right now, you know, this group is so frustrating, I must say, because these listeners, and I appreciate the spirited dialogue and the spirited debate, and if we raise a subject, whether it's Dr. Fauci or whether it's whether I'm doing too many Bigfoot segments or whether it's how I'm delivering the news or anything, I appreciate that people disagree. I'm all for it. But I don't understand why the listeners need to attack one another. So the listeners, I end up basically being – I wanted to exercise zero censorship for this group. I want to let people post whatever they want. And people got out of control. They started posting stuff that had nothing to do with the show, basically political spam and all sorts of other stuff not relevant to anything we were doing, promoting all sorts of other things. And now, even when they're on topic, a lot of the folks – and when I say a lot, I think there's really a dozen people that are responsible for 80% of the content that I'm describing. They start picking on one another, calling one another names, and then they report the comments that other people make. And then I have to go and review the comment and say, all right, well, is that over the line or is that not over the line? Is that fair or is that not fair? And I end up playing the role of Jack Dorsey on Twitter. What articles should be censored and which shouldn't? If we could all just have a gentleman's agreement or gentle ladies agreement to just be nice to one another as part of the Facebook group, then I wouldn't have to make these decisions. So join the Facebook group if you care to. Please, if you're a nice person, especially join the Facebook group, because even if you don't like me, we appreciate if you disagree civilly. So Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. Hey, you know what we're going to do at 3 o'clock? Stump the audience. We're going to give you a chance to win a brand spanking new The Other Side of Midnight baseball cap. What are you going to have to do? You are going to have to answer two trivia questions. What subject? Well, we're going to try and do what we did the last 2 weeks because I think it's gone well pretty soon. And I try and always keep you guessing. You tune in, you just never know what you're going to get. So you get to choose any subject you want. You want to answer questions about American history or presidents? Done. You want to answer questions about vice presidents? Done. You want to answer questions about World War II? Done. Motorcycles? Done. You want to answer questions about Star Trek, The Godfather, pro wrestling, baseball, whatever, whatever, whatever? Done, done, done. Rock and roll history? Done. Any subject you think you can answer two questions on, call in 800-848-9222. And after the news, we'll give you a chance to win a brand new The Other Side of Midnight baseball cap. But in the meantime, Thomas in Blue Point, Long Island, has been patiently holding. Hello, Thomas. Thomas?
2 months ago, you were a saint.
Sorry?
You should be mayor. You should be president of the United States.
Thank you.
My simple question is, where is my president? Why is he not at the Mexican border? That's all I have to ask. And you get to your next call. God bless you, laddie.
Thank you, Thomas. Again, I'm not sure I can answer that question any better than I did yesterday. I have no idea why Biden's not at the border. I think if I were to guess, I think it's a reflection of two things. I think, one, he's clueless as to how to solve the problem. And two, it's not a priority for him. solving this is not a priority for him, I don't think. All right. We'll play Stump the Audience in just a minute. 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. By the way, you've got to subscribe to the podcast. I'm told next week I'm going to start doing a new original podcast. I'm going to find out the details of this on Friday, but I'm not sure if it's video or audio or both. I'm hoping it's just audio, but the best way to see all the things that I'm doing, whether it's video or audio, is go to fmwabc.com or just search The Other Side of Midnight or Frank Moreno, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, whatever the case may be. We're working our way up the charts over at chartable.com. And if you subscribe to this podcast, not only will you get to hear the whole show for free, but you'll be able to, I don't know, improve our statistics a little bit. Hit the subscribe button. Encourage friends to do the same. All right. Stump the Audience right after the news. All you have to do is call 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
Is proud to celebrate 100 years as one of America's most influential radio stations and New York's first. WABC. And WLIR-FM, Hampton Bays.
From around the world to around the block, this is a WABC 77-second news update.
Good morning, I'm Frank Moreno. The CDC is out with new mask guidance recommending that vaccinated people wear face masks indoors in areas where there are high levels of infection. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said on Tuesday that the move should help slow the spread of the highly transmissible Delta variant. It comes as President Biden is expected to impose a vaccination mandate on federal workers this week. The Justice Department is refusing to defend a Republican congressman accused of inciting the January 6th Capitol riot. A lawsuit accuses Mo Brooks of Alabama of using incendiary rhetoric at a rally before the attack and inciting a mob of Trump supporters to storm the Capitol building. Last month, Brooks filed for federal representation against the lawsuit, claiming his remarks were in the scope of his duties as a House member. Yesterday, the Justice Department declined to defend Brooks and said in a court filing that Brooks was electioneering on the day of the riot, which is not part of his official capacity. No let up to the blazes out west, but firefighters in southern Oregon are gaining ground as they battle the largest wildfire in the country. The bootleg fire is 53% contained after charring 410,000 acres. And the Free Britney movement is on its way to Frisco, Texas. The Rough Riders, a minor league affiliate of the Texas Rangers baseball team, are planning to honor pop star Britney Spears on August 5th by giving out 500 pink t-shirts featuring the hashtag. They'll also be giving free admission to people named Britney, born on December 2nd or dressed up as Spears. The 39-year-old singer is a very public legal battle to get out of the conservatorship run by her father over the past 13 years. Wall Street took a hit yesterday. All three major markets down. The Dow down 85, the NASDAQ down 180, and the S&P 500 dropped 20. That's your WABC 77-second news update. I'm Frank Moreno, and remember, the news never stops at WABCradio.com. The Other Side of Midnight continues straight ahead.
Long Island is music. There are more legendary artists and more musical genres from Long Island
than anywhere in the country. And over 100 of them have been inducted into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame. Internationally recognized galas, benefit concerts, scholarships to students, and awards to educators. A state-of-the-art mobile museum educating and entertaining Long Islanders. We are the Long Island Music Hall of Fame. Learn more and support us at limusichalloffame.org.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Thank you for tuning in. Coming up in a half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about narcissism. But in the meantime, now's your opportunity to win a prize because it is time for me to stump you. If you think you have what it takes, if you want to answer two questions on a subject, any subject, all you have to do is dial 1-800-848-9222 because it's time for...
The Other Side of Midnight presents It's Stump the Audience on 77 WABC.
It's Stump the Audience.
Yeah. All right. You know the rules. You answer two questions correctly in a category of your choice, and you will be able to win a brand new The Other Side of Midnight baseball cap. Now, if you've won a prize before, you're still welcome to play, but... that's it. You're not going to win again. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Lieutenant G. Hello, Lieutenant G.
Hello, Frank. Frank, can I ask you a quick question before the quiz? Have you ever considered having a segment on Nikola Tesla?
You know, that's actually a great idea. I interviewed someone last week who had written a book about Tesla. We spoke about other issues, but I think that's a great idea. And we'll look for an occasion to do it, maybe on his birthday or something, or the anniversary of his death.
Right.
That's a great idea. I'm a big fan of Nikola Tesla. And his birthday was July 10th, so we should do something this month. We'll look at doing something early next week.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Odd Couple TV Show is my...
Odd Couple TV Show. All right. How many days does Felix have to prove to Oscar that New York is a great city?
3 days.
That is, unfortunately, correct. Well done. Well done. Okay. I can see you are not somebody that's going to be trifled with. Who was the compulsive gambler at the poker game each week?
Speed.
That's right. Played by.
Oh, he played.
This is extra credit. You won already.
He was on Quincy. He played the police lieutenant on Quincy.
Right.
He was a good friend of Blackjack Klugman. Yeah, I forget.
Right, it was Gary Wahlberg. I wouldn't have known that either. I had to look that up. But you're right. He was on Quincy with Jack Klugman. All right, congratulations, Lieutenant G. You've already won the hat, so you get a giant case of satisfaction. Congratulations. 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. As we play Stump the Audience, you can pick your category. I'll ask you two questions. If you can answer two, then you will be the proud owner of a new The Other Side of Midnight baseball cap. Mike in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. Excellent show.
Thank you.
Excellent show. And by the way, the haircut looks great over the phone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. May I play with U.S. geography, please?
Yes, certainly. Okay. What's the longest river in the United States?
That would be the Mississippi.
No, see, I thought you were going to get this, but it is the Missouri.
The Missouri.
Yes. I'm sorry. Sorry to knock you out so quickly, Mike. It's interesting. Both Mike and I were eliminated on the question where the answer was Missouri. I couldn't get the USS Missouri on the Bernie and Sid show on Monday. 800-848-9222 if you think you have what it takes. Al is in Manhattan. Al, topic, please.
All right. I was going to go presidential, but you know what? I'll take the audible on this. Give me geography.
Geography. Okay. All right. Geography.
But nothing but Missouri.
No, nothing with Missouri. Okay. Name, this is kind of easy, but we'll give you this. Name the largest American state by area, by landmass.
Alaska, 560,000, something like that.
That is absolutely right. Name the largest lake in the United States.
Oh, my word. Oh, I want to say Superior, but I'll say Michigan.
Final answer?
Yeah, it's a loser.
Wrong.
You should have gone with your gut, Al. It was Superior. That's why it's Superior. It's named Superior because it's bigger than all the others. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to, who else do we have? Chris in Mount Vernon. Chris, yes, topic, please.
Baseball.
Baseball. Are you a Met fan or a Yankee fan?
Yankee fan. Sorry.
Well, no, it's okay. I mean, if you're a Met fan, you had a tough time with last night's ball game. That's for that is for sure. Got crushed by the Braves. That was rough. Okay, let me let's see. Which two cities have the oldest baseball stadium?
Wow, I think that would be Boston and Chicago.
Unfortunately, wrong. Not. It is Boston and Detroit. Boston and Detroit. Halfway there. You had half credit, we'll give you. 800-848-9222. Pete is in Staten Island. Pete, category, please.
Hey, Frank. Hello, Frank. Yeah, wrestling. WWE or WWF?
Okay.
The one.
All right. And now, do you still follow wrestling?
Yeah, occasionally. Not as much. Now they got an audience back, so I like it a little better. I didn't
Me
like
too.
The TV screens, you know, like was just, you know, and when they had no audience at all, I couldn't watch it. I just, the groans and the moans.
It was so weird. It was almost like watching, if you close your eyes, you thought you were watching pornography with those sounds.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. At what age did Brock Lesnar win his first WWE title?
I think it was 21.
He was in his 20s, but he was not 21.
Wrong.
He was 25 years old at the time, Pete. I am sorry. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC if you think you have what it takes. Dana is in Brookfield. Hello, Dana.
I know Brookville, not Brookfield.
Oh, Brookville. A big difference there. Yeah. Big difference. Okay. Well, what is your category?
Well, you know, originally I was going to ask about politics, but since you're involved so much in the city of New York politics, I don't follow that closely. How about history?
Okay. American history. Okay. American history?
Yeah, exactly.
Or you want to...
You know, that's a little more broad, you know?
Yeah. 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 Okay. That's, I like it. I like it. I'm digging it. Okay. Let's pick a good one here for you. Pick a century that you want a question from, and I'll give you a question from that century.
How about, I got a good one. How about like, from 1900
to 2000?
Present New York history.
Okay. Got
US
it.
History.
All right. Okay. Which.
Does that matter with that enough?
No. Yeah, that's good. How about this? Who was the first president to receive a Secret Service code name?
Let's see. The Secret Service was formed after Grant?
No, unfortunately not. It was
wrong.
President Harry Truman, who was called General. Thank you, though, Dana. We got to give some hats away here. Jack in Queens, category, please.
Yankees baseball.
All right. So you're a big Yankee fan, I guess.
Yes.
All right. How do you – the shame about that game on Sunday, huh?
Terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
Did the screener tell you you made a mistake 5 minutes ago?
Tell me what mistake I made.
You asked the question, what were the two oldest parks in baseball?
Yeah, Rob thinks I'm wrong about that as well. But
the guy said Boston and Wrigley. Fenway and Wrigley, you said no. Detroit and Comerica Park in Detroit, that's maybe 15 years, 20 years old. But I think it's really Fenway and Wrigley.
All right. Well, we will research that. And if we did give him incorrect information, then we will absolutely give him his hat. But the list I'm reading from.
Oh, wait a minute. It might also be. No, I thought of Dodger Stadium, but that was 62. No, it's really Fenway and Wrigley.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll research it. We will research it, but we'll come back to that.
Yankees baseball.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying here, but you got to stop talking. All right. When did the Yankees win their first World Series?
1923, when the stadium opened.
That is absolutely right.
They lost. In 1921, they lost to the Giants in Polo Grounds.
All right, okay. Hang on, Jack. We're gonna try and get through some more questions here, so we can try and get to some more people. Who did the Yankees lose to in their first playoff series of the 1990s?
First playoff series?
Yes.
Seattle Mariners in 95.
That is absolutely right. Congratulations, Jack. Jack, hang on the line. Give Molly your address and all this other personal information that she asks like a census taker for, and we will get you a hat. We'll hook Jack up. Don't hang up, Jack. Thomas in Mississippi. Category, please.
Sports.
Sorry?
Sports.
All sports?
Any kind of sports.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you listening in Mississippi. Are you listening on the radio or the internet?
And, radio, internet, I guess you call it.
Okay. All right.
I'm at work right now.
All right. Great. Okay. Who has won? This is easy. One out of two. Who has won more tennis Grand Slam titles? Venus Williams or Serena Williams?
Venus.
Oh, so sorry, Thomas.
Wrong.
It was Serena Williams. 800-848-9222. Gordon is in Ottawa. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, Frank. I'm sorry to say this, but isn't Lake Michigan, since Superior is only half in the USA, wouldn't Lake Michigan be the largest lake?
So you're another Detroit guy. I will check that out, but I believe Lake Superior is the correct answer.
It's only half in the USA. Lake Michigan's almost entirely in the USA.
Well, I will research the length of each lake so that we can give Al his hat. Now, do you want to play trivia or do you want to go back and correct the record?
Star Trek
it is. Oh, right. Okay. Let me find a good Star Trek, the original series, question here. Here, let's see what we got here. Okay. Well, that's Next Generation. Hang on. Let me pull up a different list here, so that we can make sure we give you a good original question. All right. Let's begin with this one. Last name. Now that's too tough. It's too obscure. I don't want to give you that one. Let's see here. I'm not seeing some good ones for the original series. I want to pick one that's gettable. That's not too difficult. Okay. In the Star Trek series, this is pretty easy. But fine. The part of Ensign Chekov was played by what actor? Hello?
Right.
Hello?
You know, I don't know this one.
You don't know this one?
No, I don't.
Oh, Walter Koenig. Walter Koenig.
Yeah. Okay,
Gordon.
Now that you say it, I know it.
Yeah, come on. Walter Koenig wrote a great book, two great books, actually, about his time on the series as well. Jeffrey in Neptune, what is your category?
Enjoy your show. It's movies.
Movies. Okay. What's your favorite genre of movies?
Oh, well, it's not a genre, but 30s, 40s, film noir.
Okay, okay, I like it, okay. But you're comfortable answering questions from any era?
Yes.
Okay, I like it. I like your bold spirit. What are, this is easy, I'll be very disappointed if you don't get this, especially given the era that you're most interested in. What are the dying words of Charles Foster Kane in Citizen Kane?
Rosebud.
That is absolutely correct. In The Matrix, does Neo take the blue pill or the red pill? One out of two shot here.
Red pill.
He does take the red pill. Congratulations, Jeffrey. Hang on. Give Molly your information, and we will send you a brand new The Other Side of Midnight baseball cap. And we'll end with Robert in Manhattan. Robert, what is your category of choice?
The Old West.
Oh, the Old West. I like the Old West. Very, very good. Okay. Henry McCarty was better known by what nickname?
Billy the Kid.
That is absolutely right.
In fact, his name in Mexican Spanish was El Chivato.
All right, well, we're not going to give you, okay, you know, extra credit for that.
Fine.
One. Okay. What famous Old West figure was arrested for horse theft in Van Buren, Arkansas, on May 8th, 1871?
Van Buren, Arkansas, May 1871. Well, I'll take a stab at this.
Go ahead.
No, it wasn't him.
Go ahead, take a guess.
Bill Hickok.
Oh, no, unfortunately not.
Wrong.
The correct answer was legendary frontier lawman Wyatt Earp.
And
if you see the movie Wyatt Earp with where Kevin Costner plays him, they depict that scene of him getting arrested for stealing a horse, which is why I thought you were going to get it. And then he turned his life around after that. Thank you for playing our game, though, Robert. We'll try it again next week. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on another subject. We're going to talk about narcissism in about 10 minutes. But what I want to talk to you about now is life change tea. If you go to the website, getthetea.com, you can learn all about Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a great product. It's all natural. It's herbal. It gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. And it is something that is going to improve the quality of your health and the quality of your digestion. Life Change Tea removes all the junk that's in your system, at least a lot of the junk that's in your system. So that's why they call it the tea that makes you go. And if you buy anything on the website, getthetea.com, whatever it is, the supplements, I've been taking Coral C. You can get vitamin A on there. You can get stuff for your immunity. You can get stuff for your digestion. You get stuff for your energy levels. Anything you buy on there, if you use the promo code Frank, you'll get to enjoy free shipping. It's a pretty good deal anywhere in the continental United States. Actually, I think even in Alaska and Hawaii, they'll extend this deal to you. So go to getthetea.com and use the promo code Frank. Try the Life Change Tea. Try some of the other great products they have on there as well. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Good morning, Mr. Sunshine.
Side of Midnight. Those are the Beatles with Good Morning, Mr. Sunshine. Oh, those are the Bee Gees with Good Morning, Mr. Sunshine. Thank you, Rob. I love the Bee Gees. Great stuff. Oh, it's Lonely Day, so I got nothing right about that. Not the song nor the artist, which is particularly ironic since I picked it before the show. And it just goes to show you. There you go. Maybe Al's theory about my early onset Alzheimer's is correct. You could follow me on Twitter at Frank Morano. We're trying to build a Twitter army. Everything right now is a product of social media footprint. So the bigger social media footprint we have, the more influential we'll be on radio and everywhere else. So if you want to help us out, please, you can follow me on Twitter at Frank Morano. Oh, and coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk with H.G. Tudor. This is a fascinating guy. He is an admitted narcissist, and he is somebody who has a whole YouTube channel about narcissism, and he's written several books all about narcissism. So we'll get into a discussion of that. So on Saturday, I and my wife and I were doing a belated housewarming party. We're calling it a house appreciation party. And it's really for friends of ours who have not been over to see the house yet. We're not really, you know, all of our friends that have been over, we're not really inviting them. But for friends that haven't been over, we're inviting a lot of them. So that's that. I'm looking forward to it. I am hoping that this cat that we are cat sitting for the time being is gone by then. And I like this cat. He's a nice cat. He doesn't scratch anybody. He's very soft. He's nice. But he's just totally disruptive. So I got a Google Hangout message from my wife at 1 a.m. that somehow, and he's such a loud meower. Yesterday, so my wife's been keeping him locked in the spare bedroom at night. So he's minimally disruptive, not only to her, but the other cats. And somehow he got out. And she asked me, did you go into the guest bedroom? I said, no, I don't think so. And in the back of my brain, I'm thinking, maybe I did. Maybe I did open the door. Lo and behold, today at 1 a.m., he was in the guest. He got out of the guest bedroom again. He ended up in her bedroom, meowing loudly, waking up everybody. So, I mean, the sooner he goes back to where he lives, the better. His parents are coming back from the Dominican Republic on Thursday, and I can't wait to give this cat back to them. They thought we were going to hang on to him for another 3 days. Oh, no, no, no. You can take this cat right back. They thought they were going to go camping and we were going to keep watching this cat. Absolutely not. You come back and take this cat. I feel bad because he is a nice cat and he really wants to be friends with our male cat, Melchizedek. Our cat has no interest in being friends with him. And he looks perpetually surprised, but he seems like a good cat. And he certainly is resourceful in that he is able to open doors like he did with this guest bedroom 2 days in a row. But I don't understand what he's got to be so loud with his meowing for. But I am looking forward to his parents picking him up. So having this, not even a party, it's a barbecue on Saturday, which we're just about prepared for. I'm on the fence about whether to hire help for this. I don't think it's going to be a big crowd. And I'm very proud of myself that we've been able to keep the number of people to a very manageable number. I think we're under 30. I don't think I've ever had a party that less than 30 people have come to. And this probably will end up getting out of hand too. But so far, I'm very proud that we've been able to keep this to a very manageable number. Almost done with the preparations. We have to pick up a couple other good things. It's, I mean, it's a barbecue. So what do you really have to get? So my mother was very helpful. She dropped off some White Claw, and she cleaned out her refrigerator with of all the beer that she had. And that was her donation to the party, White Claw and beer. Now, White Claw during the summer is terrific. Goes down like water. I used to say it goes down like water. Now I say water goes down like White Claw. But all the beer that she gave us was expired. And my wife is an expiration date checker. I am not. She is. So sure enough, all the beer was expired. So Rachel insisted on dumping out all the beer, which I didn't mind because I'm planning to try and make a trip to the grocery store to cash in a bunch of cans and bottles today anyway. So chances are I've got at least $12 coming to me with all the recyclables that I'm poised to bring to the grocery store today anyway. So we'll see how that goes. 800-848-9222. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to talk with H.G. Tudor all about narcissism and how you can deal with a narcissist that's in your life and how you know if someone you're in a relationship with is a narcissist. So I'm very much looking forward to that discussion. If you want to email me, you can do so, frank.morano, that's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. H.G. Tudor joins me straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano.
Look down, that lonesome road. Before you travel on, look up, and seek your maker, for Gabriel blows his horn. I'm so weary, toting such a heavy load. I've been traveling down that lonesome road. Look down.
Look down that lonesome road. Well, it can be awfully lonely if you are a narcissist. So much. It's amazing if you follow the news how often the term narcissism comes up and how often people accuse other prominent public figures of being a narcissist. Now, if you've been in a relationship with a narcissist, if you've worked with a narcissist, you know how difficult that can be. I've mentioned before how both my wife and my ex-girlfriend have accused me from time to time of being a narcissist. And, you know, I've taken a couple of online questionnaires and I'm usually borderline. I'm usually about right on the border of narcissist or non-narcissist. So as we struggle to understand what narcissism actually is and what you can do if you find yourself needing to deal with a narcissist either for work reasons or for personal reasons, we turn to the go-to expert on this subject. He has a very popular YouTube channel, loads of great videos on there, author who's written a bunch of books, and he happens to be a self-described narcissistic sociopath. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome H.G. Tudor. Mr. Tudor, thank you for joining me on the radio. Mr. Tudor? Oh, I got you there. Hello, sir?
I'm here.
Oh, good.
I'm here.
Yeah, we have you now. So, Mr. Tudor, what exactly is a narcissist? When we use that term, a lot of times it seems like we throw that term around just to apply to people that we don't like. But what actually does it mean?
Yes, well, the word's often used in the idea of somebody that is excessively vain, spends a lot of time preening themselves in front of the mirror, thinks that they're God's gift to the other sex or the same sex, if that they're way inclined. Somebody that has a voracious appetite for showing off and selfies and so forth. And that's just one form of narcissism. A narcissist is an individual that has narcissism, which essentially is a self-defense mechanism. It's a coping mechanism. And it causes the narcissist to view the world through a distortion lens, in effect, to see the world from a different perspective way that that distortion field operates is to cause the individual who is a narcissist to see threats to their control, to see themselves as superior to other people, so that they feel that they're in control because they are above and better than people. It causes them to believe that people are causing problems for them. So many narcissists experience paranoia. In essence, it's a self-defense mechanism which causes the narcissist, usually unknowingly, but sometimes with awareness, to seek four things: control over people, fuel, which is basically a response from somebody, whether it's saying, I love you, to the narcissist, or giving a gift to the narcissist, or shouting and screaming and telling the narcissist that you hate them. I call it fuel. That's what powers the narcissist. It gives us validation. We also seek character traits from people. We acquire bits of them, bolt them onto ourselves. And finally, what I call residual benefits, namely money, somewhere to live, a great sex life, a facade, access to contacts. And everything that the narcissist does or doesn't do or says or doesn't say is linked to the pursuit of those four prime aims. And the narcissism is there to enable the narcissist to get those things so the narcissist can function. Non-narcissists function essentially through a mishmash of empathic and narcissistic traits and having emotional empathy for other people in varying amounts. We don't have any emotional empathy. And instead, your behavior as a non-narcissist, Frank, is regulated by those empathic and narcissistic traits that you have, which you have both, and some degree of emotional empathy guides your behavior. Our narcissism guides our behavior instead.
When did you come to realize that you were a narcissist?
Well, I always knew that I was different, set apart, and that I basically got off on manipulating other people and causing problems for them. And I've known that for as long as I can recall, even as a child. I became aware that I was one as a consequence of an ex-girlfriend who was a psychology graduate who told me that I was both narcissist and psychopath. And so I said to her, it's very interesting, how do you reach that conclusion? And I listened to her, and much of what she said resonated. Of course, I didn't say to her, oh, you're absolutely right, that's what I am. Because to do so would have transferred power to her by saying she's right. Because, of course, the term narcissist, psychopath, is stigmatic. So if I'd accepted what she'd said, I would have given control and power to her. I'm not going to do that. But much of what she said did make sense to me. And I went away and did some reading, and that caused me to realize, ah, I now have a label for what I am. And in later life, I was diagnosed as such by psychologists.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with H.G. Tudor. You can check out his website, narcsite.com, narcsite.com. Some great videos on there and some links to some great books and some other great resources. So given your own narcissism and given the narcissism of other people that fit the desire for the four criteria that you described, does it make it difficult to have a relationship with someone that is a narcissist?
Yes, it does, particularly a romantic, intimate relationship. The problem is that when we first identify an individual that caters to those four criteria, the prime aims, driven by our narcissism, we go hell for leather to make them ours. So our narcissism causes us to believe that they are the best thing in sliced bread, that they've been sent from heaven, and that we believe that we are in love with them. And often a narcissist will say, after just 2 weeks of dating, I love you, or I've loved you from afar for years, I just never told you. That isn't the case. But the narcissism has made the narcissist believe that. And the narcissist is full of compliments, perhaps is very supportive, buying gifts, very interesting, exciting, this whirlwind of energy, and goes through the seduction period. It's also called love bombing. But it's all false. The narcissist, where they're unaware, believes it's genuine, but it's not. It's driven by the narcissism because we have to draw you in. Mm. So if I went into a bar and I saw a pretty lady, and I sat down next to her and said, "Hello, my name is H.G. Tudor. I'm a narcissistic psychopath. How do you fancy being my girlfriend and being abused?" She'd undoubtedly scream, throw a dirty martini in my face, and run away. So I've lost control of her. So I have to go and present myself as something that appeals to her. So we often mirror people. We feign an interest in the things they're interested in. We mirror body language. And it's all done to draw people in. And then, when we've got you, we embed you as our intimate partner primary source, which means you supply those four criteria better than anybody else. If you think of it in terms of a hunter, our prey is the one that's going to give us the best food for the longest period of time. Unfortunately for that victim, we get bored of you, or you do things which stress our control. Invariably, you do it inadvertently, because we are calibrated to pick up on the slightest shift that signals to us that there's a threat to control. So, for instance, if somebody doesn't make you a cup of tea, Frank, you're probably not bothered about it. You didn't even ask for one. But for a narcissist, that signals that the narcissist isn't important. So if their spouse doesn't make them a cup of tea, that unconsciously threatens their control. And the narcissism jumps in as a self-defense mechanism and motivates that narcissist to assert control over his spouse by making him feel furious and telling him she's a horrible, selfish woman. So he says, "Oi, Sandra Selfish, where's my cup of tea? You're always making brews for yourself, but never for me. I'm sick and tired of how selfish you are." Now, that's not true. She regularly makes him cups of tea. Mm. But in that moment, his narcissism, through that distortion field, has revised history to make him believe that she has always failed to make him cups of tea, so that his fury erupts. And so he asserts, and she goes, "Oh, sorry, yes, I'll make you a cup of tea." And as soon as she says that, she has signaled she's under control. She's given fuel. So you can already see that in a relationship, if the narcissist kicks off over the fact that he's not being made a cup of tea, how might he react when his narcissist suggests that his wife's cheating? She's not. When she said hello to the neighbor over the garden gate, that means her attention is focused on somebody else and not the narcissist. That threatens the narcissist's sense of control. Narcissism tells the narcissist she's flirting with the neighbor. She's having an affair. He gets furious. He becomes jealous. He confronts her. "Oh, so what's going on between you and Fred? What do you mean? I saw you there making eyes at him over the garden gate, you know, showing off your cleavage, etc." I wasn't. I was just talking to him. But in the narcissist's world, he honestly believes that's what she was doing, because the perspective that he has been altered by his narcissism to drive him. In the same way that your throat gets dry, Frank, and you might feel a little bit lightheaded when you're thirsty, that's your body telling you, go and hydrate. With the narcissism has to do something to motivate the narcissist to assert control. So in a relationship, that leads to it being tempestuous. You are, many people talk about, treading on eggshells. The slightest thing that you do or don't do can cause the narcissist unconsciously to feel a threat to control, and thus you suffer some kind of devaluing behavior. You're insulted. The narcissist goes and cheats. The narcissist physically assaults you. The narcissist gives you circular conversations, word salads. They triangulate you with people and objects and so forth. So it makes for a very, very, very difficult relationship. And it's not just romantically. You can see by extension that can happen in a work environment, a social environment, within a familial environment. But the main one where it causes the most problems is the romantic one.
When let's say somebody's listening to you and we're talking with H.G. Tudor, you could check out his website, narcsite.com, and some of the terrific books that are there on this subject. And they're not sure if they themselves might fit the description of the kind of personality you're talking about. How does someone know if they themselves are a narcissist?
Quite a simple test. If you think you're one, you're not. It works like this. If you're an aware narcissist such as I, you won't ask the question. You know what you are. And most narcissists are unaware, so they would never ask themselves the question. The narcissism doesn't allow it to happen. And it's usually people who aren't narcissists who fear that they are. The unaware narcissist does not countenance that he's a narcissist because they're incapable of self-reflection. He doesn't sit down and think, All my romantic relationships seem to end after about a year. I lose friends, and my working environment is haphazard. Could I be a narcissist? He will never, ever think like that, because his narcissism won't let him. Because if he does that, he's accepting that he's at fault. And if he accepts that he's at fault, what has he done? He's lost control.
Well, so
narcissism shields him.
So, Mr. Tudor, how in your case, then, can you be a self-aware narcissist? By your own admission, you've said that you are, but how does that recognition of your state of narcissism not denarcify you?
Because I know the way that I operate. So, for instance, I know that I need fuel. I know that I need to manipulate people. I have no sense of guilt or remorse or conscience. For me, the means always justifies the ends. I find it entertaining to make people's lives a misery.
I understand.
But that doesn't, my awareness doesn't denarcify me, so to speak. My awareness consolidates it. I already know what I am. I'm not wondering. I have complete conviction as to what I am. I haven't sat there and thought, maybe I'm a bit manipulative. What does that mean? No, I know I'm manipulative, and I always know I have been. Whereas somebody who thinks they might be a narcissist, but they're not, they go, sometimes I might manipulate. Perhaps I'm a narcissist. They're not certain of it. Mm. If you're not certain, then you can't be.
You wrote a book, and people could check it out on your website, 50 Things That You Should Not Do With a Narcissist. Give us an example of one or two.
Okay. You should not expect to enjoy your birthday when you're with a narcissist, because the birthday is meant to be a day all about you. That means the spotlight's on you and it's not on us. That means we don't have control. So basically, the narcissist, where you are in devaluation, will spoil your birthday. So that might range from not turning up for your birthday celebration, buying you a rubbish present, causing a scene earlier on the day before your party, turning up drunk at your party and insulting the guests, sticking your fist into the birthday cake, take your pick. But don't expect to enjoy your birthday when you're involved with a narcissist, because it's your occasion, and that means it's about, if it's about you, it's not about us. And that means it offends our sense of control. All the other people turning up at the birthday, their fuel is going to the birthday girl or the birthday boy. That's our fuel. It's our inalienable right to have that fuel. You're not entitled to it. Of course, you don't need it, but you're not a narcissist. But it should be flowing to us. Everybody bringing you presents, that's fuel for you, not for us. Praising you, saying, oh, you look nice in that dress. Wishing you a happy birthday. And that makes us feel unimportant, small, vulnerable, and weak, because the fuel's going elsewhere, and it's threatening our sense of control. So our narcissism says, in the unconscious, for an unaware narcissist, you must now do something, sir, or miss narcissist, to counter this. And that means spoiling the birthday, in effect, or not turning up, because that then enables control to be asserted. And fuel, if we're there and we cause a scene, everybody's eyes are on us. So don't expect to enjoy your birthday. In terms of another thing that you ought not to do with a narcissist is to be able to expect that you can manage the relationship with a narcissist. You can't. We are designed to control you. We are not designed to be controlled. Our narcissism is like the suspension on a car. It's repeatedly, moment by moment by moment by moment by moment, calibrating and recalibrating to assert control. So if you try and manage it, you will do something which offends our sense of control and we will lash out at you. Even if you think to yourself, I will be supine, I will throw myself on the floor in front of the narcissist and basically bend over backwards, you'll still offend our control because you won't do something quickly enough. And often you can become painted black because somebody else in our fuel matrix, that's the matrix of all the people that we associate with, they become white, so you become black and you have no control over that. So don't expect to be able to manage the relationship in a successful manner, because you can't. It's impossible. And in so doing, all that will happen is you will become maybe beaten up. Your self-esteem will be eroded. Your self-confidence will plummet. You'll exhaust yourself and your head will be in pieces.
Those
are two of the things you ought not to do.
You've also written about exorcism, not purging demons, but purging narcissism. Let's say someone is a self-aware narcissist. How can they, or how can those around them, conduct a sort of a personality exorcism and purge narcissism from someone's being?
Okay. As I've explained, We are the ones that have to control. And you can't control us. You're not allowed to. The only person that you, as the victim of the narcissist, can do is control yourself. And that means removing yourself and purging us from your life. So it means you don't spend any physical time with us. You no longer communicate with us. You ensure that we can't communicate with you. So that means changing your telephone number, for example, coming off social media. It means that you get rid of all of the reminders of the narcissist. So that picture of the Empire State Building that we bought you for your birthday, sell it, give it away, put it in storage. Chair that we always sat in by the window that now reminds you of us. If you've ended the relationship, get rid of the chair, turn it round, put it in a different room. The fragrances that we use that remind you of us, get rid. Songs, delete them. If you hear a song playing, switch it off. And you have to purge the photographs, the emails, the love letters, remove all of those things. This is all set out in the book that you just mentioned there, exorcism. You have to remove the narcissist from every facet of your life. You avoid, for a period of time, going to the places that you went to, narcissist, so you're not reminded of them. And also, so that you don't bump into the narcissist, you change your routines. Now, many people might ask, why should I do all that? Why should I be the one that makes those changes because of this awful person? Well, you don't have to. If you don't, it'll take you a lot longer to get over the narcissist. Because not only will the narcissist be trying to come back to you, because in our minds you belong to us, we also have these repeated reminders which will act as triggers. And it will remind you of what you once had, both good and bad. And that makes your progress to recovery and freedom all the more slower. The point is, you have to ensure through a total no contact regime that you keep away from the narcissist, you keep the narcissist away from you, and you remove all trace of the narcissist. When we get rid of you, your persona non grata, this is where you get your revenge over us. You make us persona non grata so that you ensure that you have nothing more to do with any shape more.
Mr. Tudor, we're going to have to end it there. A fascinating discussion, and I have pages worth of questions for you. I hope you'll come back in the future and we can continue the discussion.
I would be delighted to, Frank. Let me know when you'd like to do that and we can talk further. Thank you for inviting me on today.
Thank you. And if people want to check out H.G. Tudor's website or his books that are available on the website, you can go to narcsite.com. You can also access the YouTube channel through there, H.G. Tudor. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
By the Chicks, formerly known as the Dixie Chicks. All right, so our research department has done a little bit of research, and Rob and the questioner or the question answerer are correct. So the reason the question that I read earlier in the stump the audience portion of the show, the reason that the answer was which two cities have the oldest baseball stadiums? The answer that the list I was reading from said was Boston and Detroit. Now, Boston, of course, has Fenway Park, which is from 1912. But I'm guessing this is an old question because the other city that was the answer was Detroit, which had Tiger Stadium, which was also built in 1912, but it was demolished. The Tigers had their last game there in 1999, and it was demolished in 2009. So my apologies to that caller. If he calls back, the second oldest ballpark is Chicago. So if that caller calls back, we will give them a hat. So call back 800-848-9222. Our apologies for the error. And my thanks to everybody for keeping me on my toes. But, you know, whatever. When you're giving people a question of any category, a lot of this is looking up, you know, a lot of this is looking up stuff online. So there you have it. All right. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. The largest lake in the United States, though, that is not as clear. Okay, because Lake Superior is the largest lake. It's true that that goes between the United States and Canada, but other folks will say that it's Lake Michigan. So Al might have been correct on that one as well. But most people have it as Lake Superior, not Lake Michigan. So that's sort of a – looks to be kind of a gray area. It looks like Lake Michigan, though, is – 22,300 square feet, and Lake Superior is 31,700 square feet. There you have it. All right. E. Frank is in Astoria. E. Frank, hang on. We'll take you after the top of the hour. I don't want to rush you because I know you've been waiting very patiently. Coming next hour, I was reminded as I was sitting in traffic 2 days ago and my gasoline was getting low of a couple of times that I've run out of gas. And I thought to myself, how many people does that happen to? Has that ever happened to you? It's happened to Rob. So if you've ever run out of gas, I want to hear the circumstances in which you've run out of gas. 800-848-WABC. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Tired yet? I hope you're not. Good morrow, everybody. I am a long way from running out of gas, at least physically, and even automotively, because I just filled up in the last day or two. But I would be lying to you if I said I have never run out of gas. I have run out of gas by my count on four separate occasions. One time was not too dramatic. I was driving around in a Ford Taurus, which was a gas guzzler. I must say, I love that car, but it was a gas guzzler. And I was trying to make it. I was almost there. I was almost at the gas station around the corner. I was living with my mom at the time. Almost at the gas station around the corner from my house. And boom. Run out of gas. Luckily, my mother happens to be a saint. She went to the gas station. She got a gas tank full of gas, a funnel, and a screwdriver. Brought me the gas to fill the gas tank, enough to get to the gas station. That was one. Another time was the weekend. Was February of 2009, weekend before a big election, and my car ran out of gas. Two blocks away from the candidate's headquarters, I had to walk the rest of the way. And then this happened to be a neighborhood where almost nobody spoke English. So I went – the candidate was John Tobacco, actually, who's now running for New York City controller. So he took me after we finished the day of campaigning. Again, this is 2009. He took me to a gas station. I had a gas tank, I think, in my car. I filled the gas tank. But the problem was I had no way to get the gas into the car. So I went into all the stores and tried to ask them for a funnel or something that I could use to put the gas in. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a single store owner or worker that spoke English. Eventually, John was able to fashion campaign literature from his political opponent into a funnel, and then we poured the gas through that campaign literature. And then I think, if I remember correctly, John set it on fire, although I might just be inserting that last part. Another time was a Friday afternoon. I was driving into work every day at the time, as I do now, working at WABC, producing Curtis Sliwa's show. He was doing 5 a.m. at the time, 5 to 6 a.m., the same hour that I do now, and 10 a.m. to noon. And lengthy day, my plan was to just get gas in New Jersey, make it to New Jersey, because back then gas was so cheap in New Jersey. And I'm leaving. I'm in the Lincoln Tunnel. Ba-boom! Run out of gasoline in the Lincoln Tunnel. Stop traffic on a Friday afternoon in the middle of rush hour. In the middle of the Lincoln Tunnel. Now, I'm not proud of this. And again, this is this is about 14 years ago as well. Not proud of this. But at this time in my life, I think my driver's license was suspended because of an unpaid traffic ticket. What happens if you drive with a suspended driver's license? You get arrested. So I am just terrified. Now, not only am I out of gas, not only is traffic backed up in the Lincoln Tunnel, everyone's beeping at me. I am just terrified that the police officer who helps me is going to ask to see my driver's license. So sure enough, I never forgot this guy. Such a nice guy. A Port Authority police officer named Felix comes, and I'll save you. I'm going to tell you the full version of this story another time because it can get lengthy. I'm going to save you that story for another time. But Felix comes to my car, and I'm not proud of this, but I just totally lied to the guy to avoid being arrested. I said, "I'm sorry, officer. I don't know what happened. There, the gas gauge said I had a quarter of a tank of gas, and then all of a sudden it just dropped to E instantly. I don't know what happened. It must have malfunctioned." Said, "All right, we're going to have a truck come behind you and push you out." So that's what they did. They had a truck come behind me in the Lincoln Tunnel. And now people are going nuts. They are going crazy. Their commute home is significantly delayed now. I'm listening to the descriptions from people like Joe Nolan and Debbie Duhaime and all these other great traffic reporters, John Del Giorno, all these other folks describe a breakdown in the Lincoln Tunnel. It was me. So they pushed me. He never asked for my driver's license, thankfully. He pushed me in this truck with sandbags between the truck and my car to a gas station in, I think, Weehawken or something. That was number three. The last time that I remember running out of gas was on Valentine's Day. I was with Curtis Sliwa. We were in Hasbrook Heights, where we were both working for a radio station at the time. And we tried to make it to a gas station. We were out of gas, and then Curtis pushes the car while I steer it, and which was working well, because Curtis is pretty strong, actually, until we ended up having to go uphill. So then we're stranded on the side of the road. Now, Curtis is very visible in his red beret, and I have the gas can now, because I'm never going to be caught without a gas can. And somebody stops by and says, "Hey, Curtis, what's the matter?" And then Curtis says, "Oh, this guy, he ran out of gas." So the guy takes me to a gas station. I fill my gas tank, and I start walking back to the car. But I get lost. And it takes me about an hour and a half to 2 hours to find my way back to Curtis in the car, who's waiting there the whole time on a pretty cold day. It was February. I don't know what it is with February and me. I didn't realize that two of those stories both took place in February of different years. Maybe I'm going to take the bus everywhere I go this February. So those are the four occasions that I have run out of gas. And I'm reminded, I mentioned John Tobacco earlier. He said to me, I remember when he was taking me to the gas station, he said to me, what grown man runs out of gas? And I said, John, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I was going to try and get to the gas station after a day of campaigning, but I was going to try and borrow $10 from you because I'm also out of cash. And then he says to me again, I'll repeat, what grown man doesn't have $10 to buy gasoline? So lo and behold, those are my four times. A week or two after that, John says to me, I'll tell you what, my wife ran out of gas last week. I said, you see, ha! And he says, so I know it can happen. And he adds, but not multiple times. So those are my four times running out of gasoline. Have you ever run out of gasoline? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. That is the question.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
If you have, tell me the circumstances. What happened? Where were you? How'd you get out of it? 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. Rob, you were saying you've run out of gas? What was your story?
Well, several times, actually. One time I was on the Seaford Oyster Bay, and I'm getting off onto Hempstead Turnpike right before the get-off point. It just ran out of gas. And I knew I was low, and there was a gas station on Hempstead Turnpike. But it was just far enough I didn't want to walk, so I called AAA.
See, it pays to have AAA.
I have AAA. I also have a gas can because it's they won't let you anymore like put it into like a jar or anything. It has to be a approved gas can with a the plastic and everything. You know, it can't be like a milk container or something like that. So it, and then another time I was in Mineola. And I was dropping my brother off, and I, for some reason I couldn't find a gas station around Mineola. And I said, well, I'll get him to the train station, and then we'll get gas. And then as we're going down the hill there at Mineola, it just ran out of gas.
Ugh.
So.
And you did the AAA route again?
Yeah, I've had
see,
AAA
that's where,
for a while.
AAA, that's where they are clutch. How long did you have to wait? Do you remember each time?
Not as long as – well, one was at 1:30 in the morning, and the other one was in the middle of the afternoon. But with AAA, they nowadays, if you have your phone, they, you could watch where the guy is or the girl, whoever comes. And so literally you'll say, okay, he's on Hillside Avenue, and now he's coming down this way, and he's making a left, and he's making a right. So you know exactly when they're showing up now.
Yeah. So about how long would you say it was? Half hour?
They always say an hour, but it's a lot of times it's shorter. It depends on the day. And you know, a couple of months ago, my car battery died. I left the light on inside, and AAA was there in 20 minutes. And I had to do my radio. Whoops, whatever. I had to do my show. So
remind me not to ride with you, Rob. My goodness.
Actually, you know what? I should learn from my mother because my mom – won't let the gas go down past halfway.
Yeah, that's – my friend Dennis, the same thing. He once he gets below half, that's when he fills. But I always feel like I can always find a better price for gas somewhere. And I
well, to me, it's not the price. To me, it's the stopping and like get, it's going to get down.
True.
It's going to get
it's
down.
That's true. 800-848-WABC. Tell me your story of running out of gas if it's ever happened to you. Coming up at 4:30, I'm very much looking forward to talking with my old friend Susan Rochester Zucconi. She's a children's book author. I want to talk to her about what the pandemic has meant for children, especially with respect to remote learning, and what it's meant to adults in terms of finding new hobbies and new ways to channel things that are, you know, that could be creative. Because unfortunately, I don't know if you've seen the guidance that's come out of the CDC. I don't know if you heard me mention it in the top of the hour news. But we are there are going to be people that try to urge a return to where we were last year. You're already seeing it with the mask mandates. And I hope we don't go to a full-scale lockdown, especially if we see all the horrible consequences of that. But people should be prepared this time around. 800-848-9222. Have you ever run out of gasoline? 1-800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Neil, tell me your story.
Well, it was during the gas shortage in the 70s.
Ah.
And I owned a yellow cab, a medallion cab. And at that time, it was odd or even on your license plate, but the cabs were exempt. They could have got gas at any time. So there used to be a Hess station on Forest Avenue in Staten Island. So I got a line at the Hess station. I waited 2 hours on line. As I'm just getting up to the pumps on the street, before I pull into the station, I run out of gas. So now, just go out of gas, and a guy walks up to me, and he's trying to get in the car. I said, what are you doing? He says, I need a cab. I said, are you kidding me? I said, I'm on life of gas. I'm not taking you anywhere. I have no gas. I got the car won't run anyway. He says, oh, you got to take me. You got to take. I said, what do you mean I got to take you? I said, go. I'm not taking you anywhere. And this guy's cursing me and cursing me.
Wow.
I want to take him in the car. But luckily, the guy from the station, I mean, he had a gas can, so I was able to put a couple gallons in the car and then, you know, get up to the pump. But I after 2 hours, and then the guy's cursing me for not taking it. It was unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. You know, it's funny. That did not happen to me, but it almost happened to me after Hurricane Sandy when the gas was very rare. Gas stations couldn't pump. I almost ran out of gas while I was at a gas station because the line was so long. And thank you for the call, Neil. I remember doing that at the gas station, and I said, that's it. My next vehicle is going to be an electric vehicle because I don't want to do this anymore. And needless to say, that didn't happen. I got two other vehicles after that, leases, and they both get good gas mileage, but the dealership both steered me away from an electric vehicle. But there was an article in the Wall Street Journal this past weekend. Headline, gas engines and the people behind them are cast aside for electric vehicles. Transition not yet noticeable in showrooms, but industry resources have shifted. We're trying to make things change pretty quickly. Apparently, we are seeing a movement. Maybe people are tired of running out of gas. We are seeing a movement towards electric vehicles. So tell me if you've ever run out of gas, what happened, why it happened, what the circumstances were. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Molly, you're a young driver. I hope you've never run out of gasoline. I'm not hearing her, Rob. Hang on a sec, Molly. We're going to turn your mic on. Go ahead.
Twice.
You ran out of gas twice?
Yeah. Once on a highway, and that was in the middle of a... It was a six-lane intersection that I ran out of gas.
What a nightmare. Where were you? What state?
I was in New Jersey. Luckily, some police officers pulled over and pushed me to the gas station that was right there. Very, very thankful that they didn't give me a ticket or anything because I was very much obstructing traffic, which is a moving violation. But the other time I ran out of gas, another good Samaritan pulled over for us. For myself, I should say. I'm standing on the side of the road, and this beautiful man pulls over in a pickup truck, and he goes, hey, are you out of gas? And I'm like, yeah. And he walks up to me. He goes, you can have mine. And then he drives away.
What do you mean? He had extra gas on
Yes.
him?
Yes. He just had extra gas, and he just gave it to me.
That's a miracle. That's like an angel.
He was also drop dead gorgeous, Frank,
too. Oh, I'm
too.
Sure he was.
So
of course,
I think somebody's looking out for me.
Clearly. That's funny. 800-848-9222. I'd love to hear your story if you've ever run out of gasoline. And we'll talk with Susan Rochester Zucconi coming up at 4:30. A little bit about her children's books and a couple of other things. We'll continue with your calls in just a moment. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno, talking a little bit about gasoline. I want to know when you've run out of gasoline. What were the circumstances? What happened and why? 1-800-848-WABC. We're going to talk with Susan Rochester Zucconi next. 1-800-848-9222. You know, after talking with the guest, Mr. Tudor, in the 3 o'clock hour, H.G. Tudor, I'm starting to think, based on his description, that maybe I'm not a narcissist. So you know what I did during the commercial? I researched all of the other types of personality disorders, and I'm not a sociopath. I'm not. I'm not a psychopath. I don't think, after talking with H.G. Tudor, that I'm a narcissist. Although maybe I am. I do have narcissistic traits, as my wife will occasionally point out when she's highlighting narcissistic behavior. I think the flag for me, and I don't mean to be changing personality disorders faster than Michaela Cuomo changes sexualities, but I think the flag for me is histrionic personality disorder. I think that's me, HPD. It's defined by the American Psychiatric Association as a personality disorder characterized by a pattern of excessive attention-seeking behaviors, usually beginning in early childhood, including inappropriate seduction. Well, I don't do that. And an excessive desire for approval. That is me. I have a desire for everybody's approval. So people diagnosed with this disorder are said to be lively, me, dramatic, me, vivacious, me, enthusiastic, me, flirtatious, me. Here's what's interesting. Women are diagnosed with HPD roughly four times as often as men. It affects only 2 to 3% of the general population. So that's interesting. I think that's what I have. 800-848-WABC. Tony in Queens. Did you ever run out of gasoline? What happened?
Frank, have I got a story for you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So, Frank, so all right, so you were just talking about these disorders. Not that I have these disorders, but I am the type of guy, as the gentleman before, I like to bring my car to half full. This way, in case there's anything going on, we got to go somewhere, run around, you always have gas in the car. Along with that being said, I'm also the guy that everybody has today chargers in their car. They always charge their phone. At least that's what I believe. So here I am. I buy a house. I buy a house in Vermont. All right? We're up there. I'm planning on retiring, getting out of New York, going up there, living a much different life, much more comfortable. With that being said, it's snowing. She tells me, hey, I got to run into town. Take a ride with me. Okay, great. I got to get gas while I'm there. No problem. Fantastic. We get in the car. I throw on a pair of sneakers. It's snowing outside. I throw on a jacket. I don't have a hat. We get in the car. We're going. We pass one gas station. I said, hey, get the gas here. She said, no, the other one over in town is much cheaper. Let's go over there. No problem. Here we go. Well, we come down the hill. We're just about to crest the other hill, and the car runs out of gas. Not just a little bit, but just dies.
Oh.
All right. We're about 2.5 to 3 miles into outside of town. I said, no problem. Call AAA, because AAA, they're right there. They've got it. They'll come get us. She goes to get a phone. Oh, my phone's dead. So I'm saying to myself, you got to be kidding me. This can't be happening. So I get out of the car, because now I can tell you, Frank, man, I'm sure you get into altercations. And under something of such duress, an altercation ensued. With that being said, I get out of the car and I walk 3 miles to the gas station.
Oh, man. And so you got the gas in the gas can, and then you went back. So what I don't understand, Tony, about your whole this whole thing is, if you're so prone to charging your phone and to not letting your gas tank go below half, how did both of those things happen?
Well, see, this is the thing, Frank. That's the beauty of a wife. Not all wives are on board. I had my phone, but what could you understand? It doesn't matter. I had it. I was so angry that you're going to let your car run out of gas and then your phone dies. I had to walk out of the car. So that gave me time to cool down.
Got it. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you sharing. Have you ever run out of gas? 800-848-9222. Nick on Long Island. Hello.
Hey, Frank. Great show.
Thanks.
So I got a story reminding me a while ago, what my dad and I, who's no longer with us, we used to buy like Hondas, and we came across this 1991 Acura Integra and bought it for $300. The guy said it didn't run. So we got it home, did a whole little tune-up to it, drained the gas out of it, gave it a full tank, and it ran perfect. And I drove it around a couple days, put it on the road. And all of a sudden, I get down to a half a tank, and I would hit the brakes or come up to a light, and it would just it would just stall out on me, but I could start it right up after a couple seconds and I would just go along. But every time I hit the stop sign, it would do it again. So I finally ran out. I mean, I just had my dad come get me, brought it back home, and we couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. But I ended up driving that car for a good 2 years, and I couldn't have the gas gauge go below a half a tank or it'd stall out like it did. But, I mean, ever since then, I was in the habit of always having over a half a tank. So that's my story.
I appreciate you sharing that, Nick. It sounds like it was certainly a learning lesson that will serve you well in the future. So thank you, Nick. 800-848-9222. We're going to talk with Susan Rochester Zucconi in just a minute and get an idea of what she's working on in terms of children's books, in terms of children's television programming, and some other things. Steve on Long Island, do you ever run out of gasoline?
Hey, Frank. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Yeah, about the running out of gas, there was a couple of years ago. I'm driving along, and all of a sudden, you know, I see the gas gauge just dropped from half to nothing. So I said, oh, man. So I do my best. I get off the Meadowbrook, and I can see the gas station. It's literally 500 feet away. And at the traffic light, runs out of gas, won't start. So I'm sitting there like, oh, man, I'm making all this traffic. And this guy pulls up on the other side, and he goes, oh, you're out of gas? And I'm like, oh, this guy's a jerk. He's just mocking me. And you know what? The guy turns around, and 5 minutes later, he comes back with a can of gas.
Oh, see, that's nice. Now, was your guy very handsome the way Molly's guy was?
You know what? I don't recall.
I bet you was. I bet you it's that same guy. It's this gas angel that drives all over the place and helps people out in distress. That's some story, Steve. I'm glad it had a happy ending.
But you know what? I also used that can a couple of months later, and I paid it forward. So
nice, nice. That's what I like to hear. That's what everybody should do. Thank you, Steve. All right. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to talk with Susan Rochester Zucconi. She's an old friend and a terrific children's book author and somebody who has written a few books that if you have children or grandchildren, you're going to want to check these out. And she's up to some other interesting things now as well. We'll chat with her in just a minute. But maybe you haven't run out of gasoline, but you've run out of energy. Well, I have a solution for you. That solution is Life Change Tea. It's a great way to get more energy without caffeine. It's all natural. It's free of – it's no GMOs, no fillers. It's completely organic. Gives you a ton of energy. But in addition to that, it detoxifies you. It cleanses you from the inside out. If you ever feel like you're having a tough time being regular, let's say, then try Life Change Tea because it is the tea that makes you go. Go to the website, getthetea.com. I drink this stuff every day. I forgot yesterday. Yesterday was kind of a crazy day because I was waking up for the haircut. Then I was talking to the gutter guy and I was running around. I got called in to do some power washing last minute. I didn't get a chance to tell you that story. And maybe I'll try and do that before the hour is over. And I didn't have a second the whole day. And I'm telling you, I feel a little different today. I do feel a little different. Maybe it's psychological, but I do think it's different. If you try it and you drink this every day and then you stop for a day or two, I suspect you'll feel the difference. Check out the website, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And use the promo code Frank in order to get free shipping anywhere in the United States. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Riding on the highway, rolling through All right. That was I wasn't sure if my headphones cut out or the music cut out, but I guess the music cut out. That was AC/DC writing down the high. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. 800-848-WABC. I am just thrilled to welcome my old friend, Susan Rochester Zaccone. I became acquainted with Susan when I was co-hosting a program called Liquid Lunch, and she was a big fan of the show. It was on Newsmax, and she would correspond with us from time to time. And lo and behold, she comes into the studio one day, and she brings in the most incredible coleslaw that I've ever tried. And it turns out it was a healthy coleslaw. It was practically zero calories, no mayonnaise or anything. It was wonderful. It was delicious. I ate the whole container of it in no time. And I said, any woman that can make coleslaw like this is a friend of mine for life. Now she's branched out into the world of being a children's authoress and a whole bunch of other things. Gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome Susan Rochester Zaccone. Susan, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for getting up early for us.
Thank you so much for having me and that lovely introduction.
Well, so Susan, you are a renowned children's book author, and people can check out your book, your website, and some of the books at SusanRochesterZucconi.com. Rochester like the city, Z-U-C-C-O-N-I.com. You were not always a children's book author, though. You've been, as I mentioned, you've been in the coleslaw business. You've been in some other fields. How did you make this transition into becoming a children's book author?
I would say with my two boys, Frankie, who's going to be 46, and Michael, who's going to be 32, both in December, I decided I used to read them 10 books a night. I really did. I read 10 books a night to the kids. And I was like, you know what? If I'm reading, I could do this. And I started with the Crumb Grabbers series. And the Crumb Grabbers I made as pastry kids because everyone likes pastries. And they were a little unusual in appearance because they had pastry heads.
So the characters in your book, they're the Crumb Grabbers and they're pastries slash people.
Yes. And Crumb Grabbers because my kids always ate everything on the plate. So Crumb Grab. So the plate was always, you know, nothing on it left. So Crumb Grabbers.
I like it. I like it. Now, you mentioned that you started this last December.
Oh, no. My first published book was in 2014.
Oh, 2014. Got it. December 2014. And so who are the Crumb Grabbers?
Crumb Grabbers are Crumby, who is 8 years old, with his two sisters, Crumb Bun, who's six, and Crumb Cake, who is five.
One of the books that that you wrote that I think really resonates with people and some of the subjects being discussed these days is Crumb Bun Says No to Bullying. Tell me why you chose to focus on bullying with this particular book.
Well, all three of them are based on my childhood experiences, and the Crumb Bun Says No to Bullying was based on me always helping my friends with a bully situation. I always stood up to the bullies, and that was in my day. You know, we stood up to the bullies.
And is that what the character in the book does?
Yes. Crumb Bun has a situation on the playground, and at the end, I don't want to give the story away.
Sure. No.
But at the end, it's always a positive outlook. There's always a positive ending.
We're talking with Susan Rochester Zaccone. You can check out her website at Susan Rochester, like the city, Zucconi.com, Z-U-C-C-O-N-I. And the books on here are just terrific. Not only great stories, but brilliantly illustrated. And makes a great gift for a child in your life, either your own or somebody else's. The illustrations, as I mentioned, are terrific. Who's the illustrator of these books?
Joshua Allen.
Joshua Allen.
He was, yes.
Great job.
See, my path in life was always helping others, being kind, encouraging children to read, to explore their minds, and learn about their own special talents.
Well, yeah, I think that's certainly on display with this Crumb Bun series. In the bullying book, just going back to the bullying for just a second, why do you think bullying has become such a problem in this country these days? What's going on with America's youth that bullying becomes such a frequent complaint?
I believe in my day it's for attention, whether they're not getting it at home, they're not. Like now, kids can't even play outside. They're stuck in their homes, and they need, you know, to escape, whether, you know, it's, you know, on TV, it's all nonsense. Well, I can't say all of it. But, yeah, they're cooped up in the house. They need to get that energy out. So if they go to school twice a week, they're going to bully whether they are in school, outside, any situation.
Yeah.
They're just not feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, the three books are, in addition to Crumb Bun Says No to Bullying, you have The Crumb Grabbers Meet the Honeyloo Kids, and Crumbie's Carnival and Magic Show. They're on, available on the website, or you can purchase them at Barnes & Noble. So it's a terrific book for anybody that's interested in a children's book. Do you think that if an adult is interested in writing a children's book, that it's an easy thing to do? Do you have any tips for anybody in our audience that might want to become a children's book author? Susan? Oh, we lost her. All right, well, we'll try and reconnect with her. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. You know, I was listening to William Shatner and Joan Hanberg on her show on Sunday. Great interview, by the way, that with Joan Hanberg. And I'm the world's biggest Shatner fan, obviously. And they were lamenting how no one has landlines anymore. I cannot understand how no one has landlines. I just don't get it, because this is what happens. You're in a bad area, you get bad reception, and that's what happens. Susan, I think the next book should be Crumb Bun Gets a Landline.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
So, Susan, what I was asking is, any advice for people in our audience that might want to write a children's book themselves and not necessarily know how to begin that process?
You could try with a submission, you know, write to different literary agents, and or on your own. I self-publish. Self-publish your books. That's mostly the way it's going now, is everyone is a self-published author. And you just have to promote yourself. Promote. That's how I always did it. And then you're invited. That opens the doors. When you get to be published author, it opens the doors. You're invited to Barnes & Noble, children's hospices, elementary schools, other children's events. You get to be one-on-one with the kids.
So tell me about your new children's show, Sue's Creative Playtime Show. What is that? How can people watch it?
Oh, that was fun. Thank you for bringing that up. I started when the pandemic. I wanted children to have fun and feel special. So I started with the IGTV videos on Instagram. And then when I did a podcast and appeared on the Alexa show, Alexa Servadidio, she's well-known. She has a book out. She has her own show. She said, you know, your love for children is remarkable. I would love to sponsor you on our show on White Plains Community Media cable television. I says, oh, that's wonderful. So that's what I've been doing, and I love it. We start with my theme song to make kids feel special, followed with a little stretching, which always prevents injuries, a little cardio, get your blood flowing and your heart pumping, followed by reading. I read a different story each time. Then arts and crafts. We make a creative creation each time, and followed by a puppet show.
All right. So if people don't live in White Plains, is there a way for them to watch that online on YouTube or something?
Yes. Yes, you could go to White Plains Community Media and the website and just scroll down. It starts with A's and just scroll all the way down to S.
And
Sue's Creative Playtime Show.
Sue's Creative Playtime Show. And what motivated you to dedicate so much of your professional and creative life towards children? Clearly, you could be channeling a lot of your writing and production talents towards adults as well. Why do you choose to focus on children?
I just love children. I think that they should be always happy and have fun in their lives. You know, they could be adults later and all the problems, but as, you know, young children, enjoy their youth.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great attitude. We've been talking with Susan Rochester Zucconi. You can check out her website, SusanRochesterZucconi.com. Check out the books on there and learn a little bit more about her. Susan, it's always a treat to talk with you. Well, let's do this again soon.
Yes, thank you so much, Frank. You have a great rest of your morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, after I leave here, it's largely going to be a morning of going to bed. 1-800-848-9222. E. Frank in Astoria has been very patiently holding. Hello, E. Frank. E. Frank, going once, going twice. No. Nick in Whippany, what's on your mind?
Oh, yes. I ran out of gas back in night.
Nick, we lost you there. Call back if you can. We lost him there. Let me say hello, if I can, to Charlie in Hell's Kitchen. Hello, Charlie.
How you doing, Frank? That was a fascinating interview you had with the guy whose personality disorder, or was it a narcissism?
Yes, H.G. Tudor. Thank you. And if people didn't hear it, I hope they go back and listen to the podcast at WABCRadio.com.
It'll be well worth it. It's fascinating. So I'm going to incorporate my question to you in what many people accuse the previous president of being narcissist. And so the question I want to ask you, and I'll make it short because you have other calls that want to talk online, is if the election were held today, counting all the people that voted for Biden, do you think that enough Biden voters would change their mind and switch and vote for President Trump? Or do you think things have gotten bad enough in the country yet where that switch, that crossover would change, where enough people would change their minds?
That's such an interesting question, Charlie. And obviously, I have no way of knowing the answer. Right. But my hunch is that no, if the election were held today, there would not be enough people to cross over. And here's why. I don't believe that anybody really voted for Joe Biden. I think just about everybody that voted for Joe Biden was just voting against
an anti-Trump vote.
Yeah. And so I think they didn't care who Biden was, what he was going to do. I think they were just so motivated by being anti-Trump that they would have voted for anybody. So I don't think many votes would change.
But how disastrous do President Biden's policies, like we have an open border, we have people with illegal aliens with COVID flooding into the country, we got the crime spiking up, we've got inflation going through the roof. How disastrous do things, I mean, in other words, how much of an earthquake or collapse in American society has to occur before the Biden voters think, well, gee, Trump's presidency wasn't all that bad before. Pre-pandemic, of course, you might have been a bull in a China shop or had a loud personality. But how bad do things have to deteriorate before people who didn't vote for Trump realize that that was a mistake?
It's a good question. I don't think that anti-Trump folks, like a hardcore anti-Trump folk would ever really say that they made a mistake and thank you for the call, Charlie, because I think ultimately it's all about for them just getting rid of Donald Trump. That was what it was about for them. I don't think it had anything to do with policies. I think the economy could go to hell. I think you could see disastrous implications in terms of foreign policy. I think you could see all sorts of things happen badly. I don't think somebody that voted for Biden would ever come to regret it because I think they did it primarily because they were anti-Trump. All right, we're going to try again with Nick in Whippany. Hello, Nick.
Oh, hi, Frank. Yeah, I ran out of gas once in 1982. I had this car, Plymouth Roadrunner. Car was really high performance, and that gas gauge is exactly accurate. As soon as it hit E, it was a brrrr, the thing just like ran out, you know?
And so what did you do?
Luckily, this landscaper guy had been coming along the same way. It was on Route 287 near the Whippany exit in 287 North, and he gave me some gas to put in the car. And that got me going there, and I quickly went to a gas station and filled it up. You know, I put some gas in. I think I gave the guy a couple dollars.
Oh, it was nice.
For like $5, you know. But luckily, he would just happened to be, because they carry gas with them all the time, so that helped me out quite a bit. But that never happened to me again. My understanding is nowadays with these cars that have electric fuel pumps. This had a manual mechanical fuel pump, but nowadays it's best not to run below a quarter tank.
Yeah,
you can burn out your fuel pump.
Right, that's what they say, Nick. Nick, I'm glad that only happened to you once. I'm glad you were rescued shortly, and I'm glad you gave the guy a $5 tip. Thank you. Want to encourage you, join the Facebook group. If you're on Facebook and listen to this show, type Marano Radio Fans and Haters on Facebook. Join the Facebook group. Participate in a productive conversation about the topics being covered on this show. You can do anything you want on there. If you want to just type it in on a web page somewhere, go to facebook.com/groups/Radio Marano. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in just a minute. So if you want to call in, now's the time. 1-800-848-9222. You can be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We have 5 open lines remaining. Now's the time to call before they all get filled, because they tend to do pretty quickly. 800-848-9222.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Just 17, everything that you see is all there in our eyes. So many years of a poor mama's tears and a day of sweet lies.
Jimmy Loves Marianne by The Looking Glass. 1-800-848-WABC. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, because it lets you control the content for 15 seconds. We'll see how witty you can be in 15 seconds. You want to make a comment, tell a joke, ask a question, plug your friend's business, whatever the case may be, you've got 15 seconds to do it. 1-800-848-9222, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Let us begin with Gary on Staten Island. Hello, Gary.
Today's Post puts out the globalist Murdoch's invention of fake news myth of Prince Eric Adams, the anti-leftist. Everybody knows he's with Al Sharpton and Herbert Daughtry. And the fake news Post today is a classic.
Thank you, Gary. 800-848-9222. Ted in Westchester.
Yeah, Frank, good morning. I was thinking maybe that young lady could write you into one of her books, being you're an old curmudgeon. We want the flory dories. We want the flory dories.
800-848-9222. Mike in New Jersey. Hello.
Frank, running out of gas 4 times, once in the Lincoln Tunnel during rush hour, NPD might apply.
800-848-9222. E. Frank in Astoria.
Yes, Frank, I'm very dismayed that President Joe Biden has indicated that we don't need the police anymore, and that defunding them could be a good way to improve relationships with the public.
Thank you, E. Frank. 800-848-9222. Dan is on Long Island. Hello, Dan.
Hey, who doesn't need an extra $5 million? Mike Lindell, August 10th, 11th, and 12th, will get $5 million if you could prove China didn't hack our election. $5 million.
Thank you, Dan. 800-848-9222. Tom in the Bronx. Hello.
Yes, I'd like to say, if I ran for any governor of a western state, I would pledge to have pipelines to the ocean to pull in salt water, like big reservoirs, and some of the water could be used, in other words, with the sun beating down, would pick up the moisture.
Thank you, Tom. Eddie in Brooklyn.
How come everybody coming across the border isn't vaccinated? It should be mandatory.
Ralph in Brooklyn.
Sizzle moron.
Jeannie in Queens.
Hi. A nickel and a dime were sitting on a bridge. The nickel jumped off. Why didn't the dime? Because it had more sense.
I give up.
Because it had more sense.
Oh, it had more sense. See, they were talking to me in my headphones. I missed it. Joseph in New York State. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to, like, tell my wife, Erin, that, like, of course I love her and I'm an idiot. And I woke her up just to hear his phone call.
Oh, good. Well, Erin, you got to forgive Joe, whatever he did. Joe's a great guy, very thoughtful. I would never think to do anything like this. You're a very lucky lady, I think. Rose in New York City. Hello.
Hello.
Rose, go ahead.
Yes. For so long, could someone tell me what a Floridori is?
It's from the Little Rascals. I am not sure why the caller keeps bringing them up on this show and in this segment, but whatever the case may be, whatever. People can use their 15 seconds however they want, and if he wants to say we want the Floridoris, God bless him. But it's from the Little Rascals. Again, the relevance to this radio program is lost on me. And if you read the comments in the Facebook group, they're lost on many of the people in the Facebook group. Have you joined yet? Join. Morano Radio, fans and haters. Morano Radio, fans and haters. You can offer your feedback on this morning's show or on anything else for that matter. If you want to be informed about what's happening nationally, about what's happening internationally, about what's happening locally, then you've got to stay tuned to the WABC Early News, because Juliette Huddy and I are going to make you the most informed you can be. I'll be back on this program tomorrow night. My guests include Michael Knowles and the AC Report with Molly's grandfather. To be continued.